morning, before being present, I would already start stand by the minute of the meeting for August 4th, 2016, the order, please. First item is to approve the agenda. Motion by Hartwell to approve the agenda. Discussion on the motion or the agenda. Hearing none, all those in favor of the motion to approve the agenda signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Those opposed, same sign. Motion is carried. The agenda is approved. Thank you. Minutes of the June 29th meeting. To approve the minutes of the June 29 meeting. Discussion on the motion of the minutes. Hearing none. All those in favor of the motion to approve the minutes signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Those opposed, same sign. Motion is carried. Minutes are approved. Thank you. Members that have any conflicts with today's agenda? Hearing none, we'll move to the Executive Director's report. John?
Oh, yes. Thank you.
Oh, yeah. I should report to the Council that Member Shara is not going to be here today, that he was fishing in Canada and slipped on the pontoon getting into the plane and tore the tendon on the top of his knee and was operated on Tuesday, Mercy Hospital in Coon Rapids. And we thought he might join us today by telephone, but I don't know that he's recovered well enough to do that. So yeah, he will not be here today.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Ron just said he's hoping to be here for the hearings, even though he may have crutches. He's hoping to be able enough to get around it. Let's see. First thing we'll start, I think, with is we get status updates. Really, we don't. We want to give you an update of where the updates are, though, at this point. So I'm going to hand that over to Sandy, please.
Status updates were due August 1st, and we have some stragglers that are still coming in, but 95% of the people have turned theirs in. I haven't had a chance to review them all yet. If you have a specific question on a program, you can give me a call or send me an email. I'm happy to answer a question you might have. Otherwise, I'll have a full report to the council members prior to the hearings.
Next thing on our my report, and this may change around a little bit. In fact, I think I'm slipping something right here right now. I think you all received an email directly from Don Hickman, or at least the someone else, with the 2016 Aquatic Invaders Summit, August 5th and 6th up in St. Cloud. So I just want to remind you of that if you do intend plan on attending, please let us know. Just so we can keep track if there's going to be a quorum present to that or not. I don't think there will be a quorum present, but maybe some interesting subjects there for you all. And it is a two-day summit, so people can split between them as well. Other than that, let's see. Outcomes process recommendation. We were at the last council meeting on the 29th. There was quite a bit of discussion. And in your packets now, per that discussion, there is a handout, which is, let's see, it's got blue printing at the top. I think it's in color, maybe not. Maybe it's black and white. At any rate, it's the Outdoor Heritage Fund Outcomes Measurement Draft Process. It just gives you this is the recommendation coming back from the staff, and I would like to proceed, barring council saying not to. The process is outlined in the handout, and basically it comes down to about six different steps. First of all, considering the outcomes by analyzing data that we currently have through completed Outdoor Heritage Fund projects and reports. So we're not trying to reinvent the wheel here. We're utilizing what is available. And for now, it does say in there that we potentially hire a contractor to do the analysis. But for now, what I prefer doing, and we have met with LCCGIS staff. We'd like to use the LCC staff to do the pilot, so to speak, on this, so we can figure out exactly how intense it will be, how easy it may be, et cetera. To keep our expenses down and keep our inspection at a good level here. The second thing is basically defining the report parameters and involving stakeholders and potentially or other experts who want to do that. That really comes down to the 5 or 10, maybe it's 20, maybe it's 6 questions that we want to address from an outcome standpoint. What are the outcomes really that make sense to the public? They want to know what meets the expectations or what will meet their questions and expectations. And then there's a running analysis, of course, regarding with the data available and with models, modeling that's available for the computer. So again, not reinventing anything, but creating what's very expensive. Determining what the outcomes are is the next thing, and from the analysis that comes through, and then really just beginning a continuous improvement process of asking, does it, is it really providing what we need? Is it providing more than we need, and so on? I think out of all of it, it's, we're going to be looking at outcomes that make sense, outcomes that are applicable, outcomes that hopefully jive with public anticipation and public expectations. So that's the process we'd like to move forward with. I think there's another comment or two on here. And I guess that's pretty much it. We're again conversing with other, we would continue to converse and we have been with other stakeholders, so make sure everybody's included in this process. Questions or comments?
Member Kingston.
This is a really big deal, measuring outcomes, and I know that we're just starting the conversation, but I think we really do need a lot of time in the meeting after we're done with the hearings to talk about it. Because right now we're concerned about hearings and things and allocations. And I feel like this is as important, if not more important, than any one year's process. So, I mean, I think these general ideas are all good, but I think it really merits maybe even a whole meeting dedicated to it. Not more. And I don't know if, how everybody else feels about it, but this could be, this is really, really important for the forward program. So I haven't had time to really focus on this yet at all. I mean, we've only started just talking about it. And we can talk about things like who might be the most appropriate entity to do an analysis, whether it's a contractor or a DNR, or if we were to hire somebody ourselves. We have a 1% administrative budget, and there's a lot of wildlife biology work that maybe it would behoove the council to have our own in-house person to do this sort of thing. So, I mean, I think there are lots of different ways to go on it, and it's good that we're starting to talk about it now, finally, and this is the right time to talk about it, but I don't know if this meeting, the next couple of meetings, are the right time to talk about it. Because it's going to take a lot of analysis and a lot of effort.
And if I may, just quickly, in talking with LCC staff and so on, there are some, again, we're not trying to, I agree, it's extremely important. And I don't want to miss that in the statement I'm going to say, because I don't want to belittle that at all. But we want to keep it as simple as possible from what from the initial look at it. So in other words, we want to take a look at the information we have and see what can be gleaned from that information first. And there may be more than enough there, because we have final reports from a few years and many final reports. If we can work on GIS basis, which seems where people are coming from, as far as opinions are coming from. That will give us, with the existing models that are out there held by U.S. Fish and Wildlife, by DNR, OBSER, et cetera, there's a lot of outcomes that can be gleaned strictly from GIS information on where these products have been applied. So that's the first thing we want to take a look at. And of course, this isn't the final. This is strictly the initial look, and of course, we'll come back to the council with that.
Thank you, Rula. I just want to say I agree with Jane how important this is, from a little bit different perspective, maybe. But I think we've been extremely well served. The state of Minnesota has been extremely well served by the diligence of the people who have proposed and were awarded projects. I think that we've got outstanding examples throughout our grant process. But I want to make sure that we do our due diligence and that we don't end up with a situation that causes money to be spent inappropriately. I think it's important for the integrity of this process to have a mechanism for making sure the outcomes match what our expectations are. I don't think we have to expend an extraordinary amount of resources on it, but I think it's a very, very important thing to do for the future of this program. 25 years of this amendment seems like a long time, but you know, we're already approaching, we're over a third of the way through that. And for this program, which I think is one of the better things the state of Minnesota has done for the outdoors, I think for it to continue to go on, we're going to have a good track record, and I think we need a mechanism to ensure that. But not saying that I have any doubts about what's happened so far. I think everybody's done a fabulous job, but we got to make sure that we continue to do that.
One other thing you had mentioned, Jane, which I should respond to real quick, just let you know, is that from an economic standpoint or budgetary standpoint, our current administrative budget will handle these initial reviews and incursions. If we were to go outside and do an RFP or something, then we may have to look at the next budget and so on, and we may still have to look at that or decide to do that come December.
How much what is our average administrative rate? It's under 1%, so what is it?
Yeah, about 0.6. Anything else on that?
The only other item I would wonder about is the timing of the consideration. I'm just wondering when is the optimum time to have a review on projects.
With regards to coming back to council meeting, I actually have a good discussion. Joe, help me with this, you give me your opinion on timing, but I'm thinking that the late September meeting, May or November meeting, either one, it could even go into December, but
that's not going to not October.
Right.
Because September meeting is allocation selection from maybe in November.
I think it's something that we shouldn't talk about while we're in the midst of this allocation process. I hate to put it off.
Mr. Chair, members, I think the way I'm thinking about this is, we look at Pelican Lake, the site that we visited yesterday, and there's how many appropriations were spent on out there, and how much millions of dollars. And it's trying to report what we saw yesterday and all of those investments and everything that's happened on the properties. Trying to report, in my opinion, to the public and to everybody who doesn't either care to understand about the ecological importance and wildlife habitat importance, but trying to report what happened out there so that everybody, everyone understands that this is a good thing. Here's what you're going to get on the Pelican Lake. And then trying to obviously, report that on a scale. It's not just for Pelican Lake. So I think it makes sense to, try a couple dry runs and see what happens, see what kind of you know, information we can glean out of the GIS data that we already collect, and then work off from that and see what we, does it make sense to just stick with the information we have? Do we need more sophistication? Does the council want different numbers or different kinds of outputs? Or you can do whatever you want. It's just going to be, you need to find the right people with the right GIS or computer skills to deliver that. So I think the timeline here, for this kind of dry run is reasonable. And it makes sense because we've got to start somewhere. And if it's going to be easy, then there's going to be some hiring about it. So, but I think we just don't have enough information right now to have a clear path forward. So this is the way to get us there.
Member Blacker?
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I think this whole discussion is really important. Like has been said earlier, and I think it's important to understand, why we're trying to do this. And in my opinion, communicating on outcomes of this fund is the most important thing that we can do. And, the biggest threat to this fund isn't about the amount that gets funded in the metro or about revenues or about, anything like that. It's about somebody understanding really what is the impact of these funds beyond acres and miles. And so what we have to do is figure out how do we communicate about that. And I think that has to be an important component, is to not completely get bogged down in the perfection of how we do this and know that it's going to be, evolutionary and how we define these over time. But we have to be accountable. And in order to do that, we have to figure out how we communicate about that. And I just don't want to lose the ability to state that, because we get too bogged down in those potential, ideas. And we heard, previously that, some of the proposers are nervous about putting down outcomes because they think they're going to be, held to, you must produce, 6 wood ducks or whatever it might be. But, that's again, I don't want to get bogged down in that. This is what we're trying to accomplish. This is what we think everything, if everything is fine, which nothing really does, what we would expect. And so I think along with that, we have to also figure out how do we take all of those accomplishments and communicate them. We have a Clean Water Fund report that reports on accomplishments. We have reports from other folks. There's really nothing comprehensive that states what this fund has done. They're individual reports, and I think it's really critical that that becomes part of this process, is what do we do with that information?
And we have a couple comprehensive tools, one of which is the report that's online that shows the location of all those projects that have been completed. And then, of course, there was the legislative report that I think, I know staff did, I think Sandy and Joel worked on, that we looked at several months ago, pursuant to the legislative request to that report. So, those are overall comprehensive kind of snapshots as time marches on. That's a start. But, there's a lot more to do than that. Is that what kind of got you fired up about it? Yes and no.
I think we've all been asking a lot. We've all been, from the day one, when each of us has come on with council and with staff, it's been a main question in our head that we've always been tossing with Don. It's been, we're supposed to communicate outcomes, but how do we do that?
Right.
And, of course, that discussion has been running around here as long as I've been, almost 2 years I've been here. So, this would be a living product. Be something that, again, this is the initial foray in trying to figure out, doing a dry run, so to speak, see what's going to work, what won't work. At least it'll give us some good ideas. And I think we could probably easily take about an hour in either September or November within the agenda to come back with a report again of what's happened at that time, if we've been able to accomplish anything. Next thing, the Mississippi River Northwoods, I just wanted to give you an update on that. Per the discussion of the last council meeting, there was a letter that is in your packet that was sent to Mr. Legal. Land Services Director up in Crowley County, asking them again on behalf of the council, or just mentioning on behalf of the council that the council does not have an interest in entertaining a land swap at this time. And also there's a similar letter, or a letter by Mississippi North was sent to Commissioner Landwehr on the council's behalf, asking that DNR not consider any further grant requests with regards to Mississippi River Northwest property for trails grants. With regard to legal guidance, it was staff was directed to seek legal guidance or see what the options were. No legal guidance has been obtained yet. There's a couple of problems. One is there isn't really a procedural process. This is a first of its kind with regards to the Outdoor Heritage Fund, and I think with regards to any of the other funds, or with the potential of a piece of property being reverted back to the state, or even with some of the other legal ramifications here, or can I say disagreements between the council's perspective and what's going on with the project. But I have met with DNR, with the commissioner's office. We've been conferring with legislators. The next step there is DNR will be setting up a meeting with their legal staff and General Greg and myself, and we move forward and chat about it. I have also contacted BDG's office. Actually, I spoke with four people down there, and finally found someone to receive the email with the description so they can decide who do we talk to in the AG's office. So it's an interesting process. Again, part of the thing is that in statute, we really don't have the guidance on what happens if. So that's what happens if we have to have a reversion of, you know, who authorizes that, who initiates, et cetera. So that's part of the conversation. So staff will continue to report back to the council. We'll have a report hopefully September. I'm sure we know September as far as what's been going on to that point.
A question on that. Does Crowley County plan to proceed with the decision and then opening things up as they have considered doing? Is their plan proceeding to where we would need to worry about some possible consequences to the land, some changes? And if they would proceed, what would our response be? How could we hold that land in the present condition that it is in?
Member Wilkins and members, so two different aspects of that, as I see it. The county has already designated the, or law designation for the trails as ATV, for that 11 miles roughly of trails. I don't know if there's anything further for them to proceed on that with, other than asking DNR, applying to DNR for grant and aid. And I'm not sure if that official grant and aid has gone through to the DNR. We have received no communication with regards to that. DNR, at least to my understanding at this point, and I don't want to speak for them, but my understanding is that there's been no progress of such an application at this point. With regards to the land swap, the county hasn't responded with regards to the letter. I haven't received any formal, we haven't received any formal information from the county at all. The only thing I understand is through the press releases that have come out, the news articles that have been and taken place in the very dispatch, and those have stated pretty much that the county is putting everything on hold with regards to any land swaps with respect to the letter that came from the paper.
So what I'm hearing is that there are going to be, or maybe presently are, ATVs using these trails. Is that what I'm hearing? And that will continue. There's no way for us to stop it.
Correct. There have been ATVs using the trails since the property was purchased, and there will continue to be at whatever level I don't know. But that brings up another thing which I should have. I just forgot to raise the council up. I did talk to, traded some emails with Ed Petrius, who works with Potlatch. Ed's very familiar with that property. In fact, he was in there, may still be within their land
sales department, and I asked him what the time frame was with the property, with leasing and with ATVs and so on. I may get the date wrong, but I believe it was since 2003 the property had been leased for hunting, and only the lessees were allowed to use the trails for ATV, where the public is not allowed to use the trails, with the exception of the snowmobile trail that I said it goes through the property. And then in 2012 was when it was sold to, or purchased with Jeff Dollars. So from 2003 to 2012 was 9 years. It was not open to the public for general use. It was restricted use strictly to the leaseholders, and of course for their corporate considerations for lodging.
Member
Harbaugh.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. So Mark and I had a conversation about sort of a proactive pick going forward on this in terms of creating definitions for what roads and trails are, and then being able to ensure that the accomplishment plans address that and it's clear so there are consequences if someone changes their mind later. Are we going to talk about that today? Is that on the agenda?
Not on the agenda.
Are we going to talk about that in my impression?
Actually, I did not put that in my report. I should have. I figured you'd tell the speaker about that in September. Maybe we can try to do it today.
My understanding is you can put it on the agenda so we can.
I apologize, Mr. Chair, if you'd like. It's the council's discretion if you'd like to add that to the agenda.
I certainly want to come up with a
today, though, and if we were to take and put that down after item number 8,
that'd be great for me.
Okay.
All right. Maybe we should print out what I think of this and you guys are something else and that we can end it. Thanks.
Okay. Any questions?
And let's see. Next runners is our next item. Joe, I'll hand it over to you.
Mr. Chair, members of the LaSard meeting, without talking about revenues. So we met with the OLA, MMB, and DNR, 9 separate letters, and 3 separate. Sorry, that was a bad joke. And the gist of all those meetings was that everyone agreed that something needed to be done with revenues because it was a shortfall in guidance to the recipients of the OHF. And so our proposal here is to work with everyone involved to come up with some language for the council to consider in December to include in the package, in the recommendation package.
Member Chase.
I would be in favor of language that says it returns to the council or it goes into that specific project, you know, something like that. Not very complicated.
Member Blackburn.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Can you say by everyone involved? What does that mean?
Yes. Member Blackburn and members, it would be all the anybody who's received appropriations, so NGOs, DNR, state agencies, and then obviously working with, you know, DNR financial management to make sure, you know, this isn't just changing the statute. It's, you know, understanding, you know, the workings of how, you know, that would work administratively with DNR and making sure that it's clean and clear process. So somebody receives revenues, it's, they understand how it's supposed to be tracked, how it's spent, you know, the accounting of it, all those specifics need to be in place.
The OLA and MMB also would like to be involved. We did meet with them and they said they'd like to be raised and brought into conversation.
Mr. Chair, this is just an incredibly complex subject, and I've been talking to a number of the folks that have received money from the Upper Heritage Fund and also generate revenues, and I certainly have questions about some of the proposals this year about generating revenues. What I'd like to do is make sure that I'm not getting a write-up the day of the meeting. It's just very complicated, and I think the first thing we have to do is do no harm. And I think that, you know, overwhelmingly the majority of folks that are receiving revenues right now are using that to pay for property taxes or projects, you know, on that land. But we have to be careful not to reduce their incentive to do these kinds of projects as well. But it gets real tricky when we're funding things that, for instance, buying land to subsidize programs, because they can take the money for land management and use them for something else. And that's where it gets very, very difficult to discern by applications what's really going to happen there. So I think it's important to know where the revenues are going to go. But it's complicated, and I just would like to be involved in that process somehow, so they understand more clearly all the implications before it comes forward.
Member Tilley?
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Members, I guess I wouldn't want us to micromanage the pennies we get here, the pennies we get, the dollars we get there. I agree with you about our money being used to generate revenue that's used for operations. That's not habitat. I think a way I would prefer to see this dealt with was that the proposers, in their proposals to us, propose how that revenue is to be used, because a lot of these projects do generate some revenue of some sort, and then that outcome become a part of the grant agreement. So we have a mechanism for dealing with any income that might be generated from a project, and that's going to happen.
One more thing, you know, some of our projects are actually dependent on revenue, and that presents an even more interesting situation with the Deer Hunters project. That relies on getting revenue, and so you can't restrict it because we're actually, you know, dependent on that project succeeding by generating revenue. So it's just a very complex subject.
Member Harwell?
This is really fairly simple. If the project is planning on revenue, if they disclose it fiscally, well, by all means, we should encourage that. If they're going to put money from the project back into the project, they're budgeting for it. They know it. You know, we should have no objection to that. The question comes, what happens if there's a windfall and there's no sort of boundaries around how we're going to spend. So for me, it's simple. Barry's got it right. If they disclose it and say, this is what we're going to do, I'm all for four different times with those being brought. But as long as they know what they're going to do, we should be thanking them for lessening our burden of having to do the project.
Member Blackburn?
I wish I had a black and white conception but I don't. Because I think revenues generated just because they disclose it aren't just great. Some of them may be questionable as to what it's doing for habitat versus operations or educational programming. And so I think we have to decide what is that appropriate use of revenues. Is it about habitat? And again, what is it that is being used to supplant or subsidize operations that wouldn't be funded otherwise? And I think we have to define that.
And I agree with you. My point was, if they disclosed it on the comprehensive plan, we had the opportunity at that point to say we like it or we don't like it, and approve it. If they haven't disclosed it, then it ought to come back to us. So I think disclosure and discussion is appropriate. But for the most part, I don't forget the people who, or the organizations that are taking revenue off the project for some reason and putting it back into the project. I don't want to spend the operational dollars. So I think it's all about disclosure and clarity. It's not about being careful.
Mr. Chair, members, so we'll come back with the draft then, obviously before the last meeting of the year, so that November, September, somewhere in there, that we'll have a good draft for the council to review, and then we can discuss those big ticket items during that time and come up with a plan.
Member Kingston.
Does it have to be legislated, or can we just amend our procedure? We could do that anyway.
There, Sandy, you're trying to say something. Go ahead first.
I think that there would be a lot more comfort if there was something in statute, so it would be enforceable.
One of the things that the OLA, as we're discussing, so the OLA and then the NRS Fairlocks, sometimes it's much nicer, and also it's with legislative staff, sometimes it's much nicer to work with session law rather than statute, because it gives you a chance, or within even within our accomplishment plans, because it gives you a chance to decide is the wording exactly like you want it. And are there going to be unintended consequences, et cetera? If you put a regular statute, sometimes it's not exactly as it should be. The unintended consequences get you as a surprise. So there's some.
I'm not talking about statute. I'm talking about our own internal procedures.
That's it.
Those are not statutes. Yeah, I think it was in about conflict.
Aspect of the recommendation. Good morning,
members. Joe, would just two other things quickly. There is 2016 Metro statewide, Metro and statewide survey of residents that will be done by the University of Minnesota, the Minnesota Center for Survey. In 2011, the council participated in a survey, that survey, and basically sets baseline of public familiarity and public opinions and expectations with regards to the Heritage Fund and the SART Council, et cetera. Staff would like to participate in it again at this point. It's a five-year term, and it would give us a chance to gain some, update the data, get some more current understanding of public awareness and expectations, and it also may be helpful, of course, from the outcome standpoint. 2011, the budget that the council approved for that was $15,000 because there is a cost for the university, and it's a cost per question and time frame per question. As I understand, in talking 2 days ago at the university, they said that the cost is about the same on a per question basis as it was then. We would have, I think it's until September 6th, to have our final list of questions and do them. And of course, we can still tweak it from there. But staff would like to move forward with that, if possible, and have the council approve, again, a budget of $15,000 so we can work with the university on this. And that can come out of the current administrative budget.
Member King.
I'm in favor of it. See what the questions are that we're submitting.
I guess my question would be, are we going to use the similar question so that we have a way of determining,
yeah,
measuring whether it's
Yeah, the answer is yes. Some of the questions would be the same, some would be similar, some would be different, because some of those old questions aren't necessarily applicable at this point. We would like to get back to the council so the council can do those questions and so on. We won't be able to do it. We have to do it before the September council meeting. So it would either be potentially, we could do it via email and work on that.
Specifically, I'd like to see what was asked, what our questions were last round and then this round.
We'll have a full breakdown for that for you.
So the motion would be in order to approve the expenditure of $15,000 for the survey question. Motion by Member Kingston to get $15,000 from the administrative budget to participate in the statewide survey. Discussion on that motion for the survey. Hearing none, all those in favor of the motion signify by saying aye.
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 Those opposed, same sign. Motion is carried. And the $15,000 is approved. Thank you.
The very last thing I have is we had a Habitat tour yesterday that Jane and Barry were able to come with the son, and also Janelle and Brad and Craig were able to attend, so that was very nice. Unfortunately, those of you who didn't come missed some of the most gorgeous native or prairie restoration you could ever see. It's incredible. And the Pelican Lake was really, really cool. Barry, Jane, you guys have any comments to pitch in?
I just wish it had been a little warmer.
It was cool.
I know.
I just want to say just how overwhelmed I was by the incredible success of what our partners have done to restore our native prairie and to provide habitat that's unbelievable. All the thousands of acres of prairie we saw and the properties around Pelican Lake were just unbelievable. Very happy.
Now that I've disclosed my smart aleck answer, seriously, in addition to Pelican Lake, Crow Hassan Park was extremely impressive. It has a scope of really impressive scale, and the kind of work that they're doing with volunteers to collect native plants, you know, that's really important and really impressive. And the success of their restoration in a few short years is quite amazing. And the enthusiasm of the people working at that place and all of these places is really infectious and really impressive. And for instance, at Crow Hassan, they don't even let public on the property other than on the walking trails or the horse trail. There are no paved trails. They don't even let people pick mushrooms because they don't want any human impact to interfere with the wildlife aspect. And so I was impressed with that. Agree with you.
Thank you for participating. Thank you, Mark. Any further questions for the executive director? Okay, then we'll move to item number 5 on the agenda, the comprehensive plan amendment. Restoration. I believe they have presentation. Welcome back.
Thank you. Good morning, Mr. Chair and members of the council. We'd like to provide some background on the project this time around and give you a good look at it. I know several of you have visited the property. Now, for those of you who haven't, this will hopefully give you a little bit more of a visual of the property. I'd like to just mention that all of the photographs in this PowerPoint presentation were taken on the Granis property, and you can see how beautiful it is as you look through these upcoming slides. We're going to give you a little bit of context and talk a little bit about natural features and uses, the project components as well as we move through these slides. This is the overall Murcutt Valley Protection Area. The Granis property is included, the Lindbergh property. You can see we've also been looking at some of the areas surrounding these that either have restrictions on them or are majorly extended backyards of several of the homes that surround the property. So this is kind of an overall look at this protection area and what we're trying to achieve as a whole out in this area. Phase one was the initial acquisition of Granis property, about 16.8 acres. And then the phase two that you're seeing in green, that's the Lindbergh property, 103 acres, already protected with a permanent conservation easement. The restrictive covenants cover those sort of orange, gold-colored areas. Those are residential properties. And then you can see the current Granis property easement, that phase three area. Here's a close-up of that with the several parcels that are involved. And as we talked about before, there is varying ownership. We have Vance and his lovely wife, Darlene, who own certain parcels, five of them. And then three of those parcels are owned in half interest by Vance, and then 25% interest each of two of his cousins. I'm just going to breeze through these because I know you have these in your packet, so just stop me or slow me down if you have any questions, please. This is the current land cover on the property. You can see that sort of gold area, that whole northeast area. That's where there is Southeast Asian farming going on right now. That's just through this season. So after 2016, this whole area would move into a restoration phase with natural vegetation. This is a high-quality lake. Quite a bit of depth of clarity in this lake, 20 to 30 feet in recent tests. And then you can see there are also several game fish species in the lake. So it really is a high-quality resource. It's a diverse landscape. We've got forests and grasslands, lots of birds, reptiles, and animal species on this property. There's been surveys done over the years and some more recent surveys that have added even more birds to this total here. So wonderful habitat on this property. Lots of uses over the years. 1920, there was dairy farming going on the property, portions of the property anyway. But in more recent years, it's been habitat and wildlife rehabilitation. Since the mid-1960s to about 2008, there was a lot of waterfowl rehabilitation, pheasants. The swans that were raised on the property were donated to the DNR for this reintroduction program. Current activities, restoration, they're introducing native species on the property, improving that edge habitat. Those are Sibley High School students doing some edging. removing invasive species. It's hard to see in that picture, but there are approximately 160 goats that were released to chew on the buckthorn. It was very successful. And then there's been carp removed. We chose this photo rather than the wheelbarrows full of carp, but there were several large carp removed from the lake over the years. Also current activities, there are wildlife rehabilitation activities going on right now. That picture of that great blue heron was taken at the southwest area of the lake after it was released. It's beautiful. And then a lot of ducks. Other current activities, we've got DNR youth turkey hunting, that photo in the upper left, Leave No Trace classes being conducted. There's a photo of the beekeeping in the upper right-hand corner, and down in the lower right, there are camping techniques being taught and learned by those kids in that picture. And then water quality testing by Invergills Community College students. So there are college activities that connection with Invergills going on in the property as well. The components of this phase three that we've been talking about for the last few meetings are this acquisition of 108.7 acres in a natural area easement. There is a natural resource management plan that we provided to you that's prepared for each project. This is a copy of it. I know you've got it online. I don't know how many of you printed it out. It is several pages. I do want to note, excuse me, at this point that we recognized after we sent it, this is a work in progress, and so we apologize for that. There are pictures in here from 2010 where there were some erosion issues out on the property. Those have all been remedied. There is vegetation growing where there wasn't. The trails are wood chip, they were repaired. So it's been a long time, actually, since those pictures were taken and those repairs were made, but we just wanted to note that those photographs are old, and when this preliminary document is updated, those will be new photographs. So we apologize for that, and we didn't want that to be a concern because those things have been remedied. There's an 8-year option agreement that would be associated with this acquisition. To acquire fee title to both of the easement areas back at that map that showed the phase one and the phase three. We're talking about fee title acquisition of both of those properties at no additional cost, except for potentially a cost of a building if it exists. But there'll be an operating agreement put in place, not only for this property, but there will also be significant restrictions on the use of the associated homestead property to assure that it does not end up as a continued residential property after the Brandis family has finished living there. The county is contributing $1 million to this project as a match for the state funds that we're requesting. And there is a significant landowner donation based on the value of this property that we just wanted to make sure we point out. Easement requirements. The conservation values are protected. There's an annual monitoring visit that's conducted on each one of our easements, and we'll be on this one. We first look at aerial photos. We go out and walk the property to make sure that there are no easement violations occurring. And if there are, we enforce that easement. We typically start with discussions with the landowner. Sometimes they're not even aware that they're violating their easement. So it's not a heavy-handed process, but we are prepared to have our county attorney's office work with us if we need to enforce any of those easement restrictions. All uses and activities that are allowed by the conservation easement cannot degrade or damage the habitat. Excuse me. It's the easement restrictions that are put in place, and then it's those monitoring visits that we make sure that there's no damage occurring. Pardon me. Perfect timing. Excuse me. Also restrictions, no development of any kind, no residential, commercial, industrial development, no wind turbines or cell phone towers or anything of any kind of structure, no new structures. No roadways or paved trails are allowed. No new utilities across the property. No agricultural uses are allowed. Like I said, the agricultural uses that are currently occurring would end after this season. And then no alterations of the water bodies on the property. There are a lot of habitat, I think, related allowed uses. You can restore the habitat, and the wildlife rehabilitation could continue. The non-paved trails that I think some of you have seen can exist. Small non-permanent structures, if we wanted some kind of a temporary dock or some other kind of a small structure, if there was a little bridge needed to cross something, I mean, that's possible. But all of that has to be approved. Public access with landowner permission. This is not open to just general public access. Restricted motor vehicle use or motorized use, public safety uses, emergency uses, and then there is the ability to use other motorized vehicles, recreational vehicles, but again, it cannot be damaging the property. Low impact. Thank you. I appreciate that. Low impact activities, such as what you see, people out there conducting natural habitat, wildlife rehabilitation type activities, and then there is the designated building area that's currently allowed. Thank you. The Natural Resource Management Plan, there's a preliminary like you've seen, and this preliminary is in progress. But also, within 6 months of closing, we have to have a finalized NRMP and a landowner agreement that lays out the responsibilities for all parties involved, what the landowner is going to contribute and do, what the county is going to contribute and do toward managing the habitat. And all improvements to the property have to be approved either through the Natural Resource Management Plan, written agreements with the county per that easement document that I think you've also seen. This landowner agreement, like I said, lays out roles and responsibilities and estimated costs of the work that we're intending to do out there or that the landowner is wishing to do. In this particular case, the Grants family is contributing $50,000 of cash or in kind to implement their Natural Resource Management Plan. There is a designated building area on the property. It's located where there was a former farmstead. It's on the perimeter of the property, and you'll see that in the next couple of slides as well. And for those of you who've been out there to the property, it's served by an existing gravel road. It's an approximately 1,500 square foot building and a small parking area, and none of it paved. There's some program staging that's going on there, equipment storage. This building is of a construction that to move it isn't exactly possible. You can't just pick it up and move it. We're just knowing that we have to tear it down and just restore that area. This area would also allow for future construction of an upgraded building, currently in the easement type. These are some pictures of that designated building area. That is, it doesn't look like much right now. It's a historic silo. You can see it was patented back in 1903, but it's a wood slab silo with a stone foundation. That picture of the farmhouse on the upper left, that home is gone, but that was the farmhouse. That was the barn on the lower left, and there was a small milk house out there as well. The only thing that's out there now is that silo. This is the existing building, nothing large or glamorous. You can see the inside, there's pretty low key, but it's just that single-story, 1,500 square foot building. Some of the activities that you can see are going on inside. This is a pictometry aerial view of the location of that building. You can see up along the north area. Can you use it? We could just flail around with that little pointer for a while. But if you go along the northern part of the property, you can see where the road is coming in off of Barnes Avenue to the east. And then it comes down along the back of those backyards and then swings out to the building. The building is not sticking way out into the property. It's along the backyards of those residential properties with that road hugging the edge of the property. After the last time that we were here, we talked to the Grannis family and we looked at the fact that this was a 3.56 acre area. Did it need to be that large? And so what you're seeing in this aerial photo is a smaller 2 acre area that more closely hugs that property edge, and we would propose that this building envelope would be a smaller size and closer to the property boundary here. There was discussion at the previous meeting about options for relocating this building. You can see some of the suggestions were that northeast corner. There's the current location, that's number 2 on the map, and then number 3 is actually where the barns are, the current barns are located on the homestead property. So to keep those areas in mind, that northeast area, now these are our opinions, but it is a little bit more of a poorer setting when you go to that kind of a building for that kind of activity. Having it set back away from the road would be more ideal. And the distance from that location up next to the road is just a little farther away from all of the activity areas. There's the existing site, and then the homestead property. If you look at this property, we would need to construct a driveway to it rather than using the homeowner's driveway currently. And so that's an additional consideration. There's steep topography, which I know you can't see from this aerial photo, but there is some steep topography to deal with. There is potential removal of some very large and old oak trees, and the Grannis family is very concerned about that potential. I think we would all want to consider not having to remove those trees. It's close to proximity to the lake and sort of the refuge area, but there is potential for poor transportation access as well to that one. So we have been trying to consider reasons why or why not, why we would or would not want to move that building if possible. This is the current homestead area. The house is on the right. The barn on the left, and then there's the rehabilitation building. There are two structures out there. That's the photo in the center. That homestead exception area is about 7 acres and includes that house and driveway and 2 barns. The future ownership that we outlined the last time we were here is potentially for the next 60 years. We've got the family, potentially 3 generations of the family. And then an educational nonprofit would have the opportunity to occupy that homestead area. And if all of those options are considered and rejected, then the county would have that ability to purchase this property. There are restrictions I mentioned before that are being placed on this homestead property and the house itself. No more than a 10% expansion of the home. As the Grannises are aging, they're looking at what they might need to do to remain on the main level of their home, which I think a lot of us do as we are starting to get older. I did it myself. They have a tuck-under garage right now, and so they would look at the potential of moving a garage up to the home level, walk-in type level for their garage. All of the easement terms would be followed, however. We wanted to look at this project comparison. I think the Carpenter Nature Center project has been brought up as a potential guide in in some ways to what's being proposed on the Granis property. We do this mainly to try to illustrate that we think that this is a habitat protective type proposal. 108 acres there, the trails are not paved and they will not be paved. There are educational programs in both instances. There is just a 2 acre now designated area. It's about 2% of the total property, multi-purpose building, parking area, potential for that future building. The current structure has the ability to use thermal heat. It's not at all hooked up or constructed, but those are the kinds of considerations that the Granis family is making in terms of this building. And then associated utilities are certainly be allowed. I think the main benefits of this project is prime wildlife habitat. I think and I hope that we've illustrated that based on the amount of species that are out there, what is supported by this lake and the surrounding area. We do think that the current uses and any proposed uses that would be allowed for the easement are compatible. And then we've got the leveraged resources from the county, and we think that is a big plus in this project as well. I want to thank you for your time, and we would be happy to answer any questions that you have.
Great presentation. Questions? Member Kingston.
I appreciate all the effort that the Dakota County has been going through for 4 years, trying to make a square peg fit into a round hole. And it's not that there are not any wildlife benefits, but I don't know how many times in your presentation, if you count how much time you spent talking about people-oriented accommodations and needs and activities versus actual potential wildlife outcomes and impacts. This is a people-centric program, and this is a project. And I'd like to just go back to 4 years ago when the council talked about this whole project initially, and we told it to go to the county, no buildings, no education center, no shooting ranges. We've been consistent in that message since then. And I know that you've got a very tenacious and talented landowner who's very motivated to do something that's wonderful. It just, in my mind, does not fit the Outdoor Heritage Fund at all. The only way that I would consider going forward is if there were a portion that was set aside for wildlife with none of these other impacts, and we said that at the last meeting. And I appreciate all the work that went into the easement, but the second paragraph, the first full paragraph on page 6, makes the whole thing moot. It all talks about classes and expanding programs and how the whole thing is maybe revised. The owner is not required to implement. They are all completed with the consent of the landowner. Everything is voluntary on the part of the current and future landowners. This is not like any easement that I've ever seen. So the easement doesn't work, and the project doesn't work, and the only way that I would afford any money towards it would be if something were to be carved out. Again, I admire what he's trying to do, but it does not fit what we're supposed to do.
Other questions? Member Blackburn?
Thank you for your presentation and your diligent work trying to make something happen here. I just want you to know that I wasn't here for the Carpenter Nature Center discussion, so for me that comparison didn't work. I was one of the people that went out and took a look at the property. I think it's a beautiful property. There's just, I was kind of looked out about that. My position on the project hasn't changed. And I know that you state that there's reasons why it might be inconvenient to move the building for the reasons that you stated. But the reason why the Outdoor Heritage Fund would be funding this project is not for the building. It's not my consideration. It needs to not be part of the project. And that's for me and for how I feel about it, and obviously there's a number of us, I can't go forward with it with that building in the project. And I said the same thing to Mr. Grannis when I was out there, and I respect what he's trying to do, but Outdoor Heritage Fund should not be funding nature centers.
Member Wilkins.
Mr. Grannis was very kind and sent me a great deal of information and pictures that he took, and I very much appreciate that. I hope that you will let him know that. And I have just been corresponding with my questions directly to him. I want everybody to know that, too. And it's along the same line as what we discussed before, and my concern with the trails and all, what they look like, because trails are an issue. And so when I got the management plan, I looked very carefully. I read the whole thing, and I looked at it, and it's pretty generic in nature. It's not something that I've seen before, because what I've seen before is the management plans that are ready for signature, that are, say, what party is going to do what and what the timelines are, and I wanted to see the restoration plans and what was going to happen at different... Everything looks like, Jane mentioned, that it's on a voluntary basis. Nobody's tied in really into a schedule, and I can't see that. I can see a lot of wiggle room here, and because the landowner really is dedicated to that, you can say, well, that wiggle room, it's okay, we can wait to formalize and finish this management plan and get the approval first, because we know what is here is what's going to happen, that all of these things are going to happen because the landowner has, we can have good faith in the landowner. But the problem with that is one of the reasons we have perpetual conservation easements is to clearly define what the obligations are before we sign the papers. And I'm not seeing that. And so I'm going on faith. And it's tough to go on faith with this many million dollars of public money. And that's really tough for me. The other question is the building and the education center and all of this. And I visited with Mr. Grannis, and this is exactly what we wanted to do with our property. We had educational things on our property many, many times. We were one of the first hunting mentor programs in the state. We continued that. And when we did our conservation easement, we set aside part of the property that we remained that's not in the conservation easement so that people could camp or whatever and use the public land, the AMA, or our conservation easement land. They could camp there, they could have activities, we could still run deer day clinics and such, but we had this land set aside which was not part of the conservation easement. And that's an agreement with the DNR. And we were very careful because of all of these questions that came about what was the reason for our conservation easement, and the reason for our conservation easement is to perpetually protect the land and with habitat in mind. And that's what this fund is about. And that is what we had to do with ours, is we had to separate it out in order to make this happen. And so I still come back to that and say, that's the right thing to do. To separate it out, to have your conservation easement cover the land that you know is going to be clearly restored, and you have timelines, responsibilities laid out, and the other activities are centered on land that is not part of the conservation easement. Now, those folks can certainly, the public, they can use that land, they can do maintenance, they can do all sorts of activities and all. But the actual property that holds the nature center, so to speak, or the educational center, really shouldn't be part of the conservation easement. That's my very strong feeling. I think it mirrors what both Jane and Julie said, separate things out. I really want this to happen.
Member Wilkins.
definitely, and I haven't seen the property, but I do believe this needs to happen. But I can't in good conscience look at what happened on our property and what happened on other properties where things were separated out and say, well, now it's okay in this particular instance because we want to do it so badly not to separate it out. So that's the tough choice that I have to make when it comes to voting. I want to do it, but my conscience tells me it's just not quite right. Is there a way we can make it right?
Representative McNamara.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Good morning. I apologize for being late. I forgot my billfold and I said turn around and go get it. So, sorry, folks. I don't want to come late because you're always punctual, Mr. Chair, and I appreciate that. A couple of things. I think it's important. I really like this project, and the Grannis family, I think, has gone way beyond many of the metro projects we've done. I think it's important where there's some things that on this project that aren't specifically habitat-orientated. I think, as the case here and in Washington County, that project that's been talked about, both of those have significant county maps that more than exceed the value of that area that we're worried about here. I think this is 100-some acres, and the county's got, if I'm not mistaken, I think, whatever, it doesn't matter, but I'm not remembering. I think it's $1 million or not $1 million. Yeah, $1 million it is, yeah. So it's more than, way more than exceeds the value of part of it that we say is not habitat. But I think what's really important, this council has felt extreme pressure from metro legislators to spend money in the metro on habitat projects. And this kind of project is the best that we're going to find, absolutely, as far as what it is. We're never going to get it. And we're not even taking into account, you showed all those pictures that maybe made us nervous of the Grannis family's complex. That's not part of the easement. But we're going to get it for free at some point in time. It's going to get protected. That's not even being counted, and we're hung up on that little area where this really cool silo is in the other building. I look back, we did the Arboretum. I think we gave $1 million for the Arboretum. The Washington County money, we didn't identify. We never, ever had a discussion that I remember about the Carpenter Project at this council. We gave the money to Washington County, and they went out and spent it the best way. And the reason, members, I know that, I serve on the board of Carpenter Nature Center, and I never knew that that was being considered, and when it came there, I excluded myself from all those discussions at that board, because I said I was on the council, and we approved money to go to Washington County. I didn't even know they were thinking about going to what Carpenter Nature Center. I said, I can't be part of this discussion. In the end, they made a deal. I actually don't even know exactly what it was, but I know the acreage that got easements on. I mean, it's really cool property, too. If we set a guideline that we want it to be the same in the metro as the rural, there's only two spots in the metro that we're going to buy more land or protect more land, and it's going to be at Vermilion Highlands and Carlos Savior. Those are the only places that we're going to spend money in the metro to protect land, because they're the only true, really, that will meet the criteria. We've done the one up in Anoka County, Columbus WMA. We've done a number in the metro where the rules are different if we're going to protect some land in the metro, and it's expensive. And I think our group here should have a discussion. Maybe we should be more rural-centered and let the legislature know that that's right. But this one, we have set the bar so much higher than the money that we sent before. I'm just worried that we're, not being right here. I really want to protect this land. I think it's really deserved protection, Mr. Chair, and I'm hoping that we can look at it. And when we put it in balance with the other things we've done, I think it's appropriate to do. And if going forward, we say, I actually think you're not going to find another place in the metro willing to do as much as the Grannis family is willing to do. The reality, and you get a huge match. We often don't think about that match. That match is taking care of any concerns we have more than And the county has really negotiated a tough deal with the family. I appreciate it. I hope we can find a way to make it happen, for sure.
There's one other big issue I think that I'm having a lot of trouble with, and I think all the council should, and you too, is the appraisal and what the DNR has said about the appraisal. To quote Cindy Nathan, who's an expert, and I took a seminar from her on the diligent process that DNR has for appraisal review and certification. Now, this appraisal does not meet state funding requirements for LSOHC, LCCMR, RIM match, general fund, or state bonding. But what are you going to do about that?
Mr. Chair and members, we're quite aware of this. We have been working with DNR. I think because sort of the protected data and so forth, we have to be careful with it. But let me just summarize that this project has been appraised four different times. And the person that did the review on this appraisal appraised it 2 years ago. And DNR guidelines do not allow an appraiser that has reviewed it within 2 years to actually do the review. So we have some issues that, in fact, we don't believe that the review process that the DNR used followed their own guidelines. And so we are in conversations with both Ms. Nathan and the grants manager to figure out how we go forward on all of this stuff. The appraiser that we've used has 40 years of experience. He's written 5 textbooks on appraisals. He's never had an appraisal rejected. And so we think that there is merit, and so what we're trying to arrange is a meeting with all of the parties to see if we can resolve that. We had a discussion with Mark about whether we should even come here given this uncertainty about the appraisal. And, you know, it was our sense that if the commission sees merit in proceeding with the project, then we will have that conversation with the DNR and the appraisers to reconcile what the differences are. And no agreement can be made until the appraised value is approved and certified. We just don't think that right now, first of all, there's no actual appeal process as part of the guidelines. And so I think there's some issues that we have to work out. But we want to assure you that notwithstanding your decision, nothing could move forward. The county board has made our approval contingent on the appraisal being approved. But that would not get in the way.
Oh, thank you. So my answer to that would be get an answer on the appraisal, and you and I both know that appraisals done year to year can vary. The market changes. Everybody knows that. But that's a big hurdle, and that's the first hurdle, and then you've already heard my other objections. But to me, the appraisal issue has to be resolved.
Mr. Chair and members, one of the issues that we have is that we have a one-year timeline in terms of the effective use of the appraisal. We believe that this same appraisal can be used. It needs to be reviewed. We're going to suggest that it be reviewed by a different party, that it goes through the same DNR process. The issue will be that if we appraise this again, there is no question that the value of the property is going to be much greater, and that it's, if we were to go forward, that it's going to be much more expensive to proceed. And so we're hoping that we can have the meeting with DNR, see if there's a process that can review the appraisal, and then make a decision based on that going forward.
The legislature was very generous in extending a deadline, which I think is unprecedented for this council. I suggested months ago that this be terminated at its natural end, and that you resubmit, and you have 3 years. I understand your timeline crunch, but that's not because of this side of the table.
Member Blackburn and Member Hartman.
In response to Representative Batner, I don't believe that we're holding this into a higher standard. I wasn't here for any of those other projects, but I believe that all of our other projects do require restoration, and that the funds are used for the constitutionally designated purpose. And that's really all I'm asking for. I've already stated I think the property is a very nice property. It does need to be restored, and I don't think the pathway forward is all that hard. You'll probably need to get a reappraisal anyway because the nature center needs to be excluded. So that chunk has to come out of there, and so you probably have to get a reappraisal. The restoration plan has to become mandatory with more information about that process moving forward. And for me, those are the main things. The nature center needs to be excluded. The restoration has to be mandatory. It's not a voluntary program. I don't think those are the high standards.
Member Hartwell and Member Tilley.
Thank you. Besides, I think there's some things with this that probably need to be questioned about the budget. I just need to speak to the whole question of the building, because I think that's the primary issue here. I get that the building in the homestead site would be more expensive to put an access in, but you've already got a disturbance, and to me, that's the best place for the building. I don't have a problem with an easement that specifically allows for certain buildings in a certain place. I almost prefer that, because if you exclude an area, then you've got a free-for-all potential. You could get a five-story purple building in the middle of your protected area. I'd rather have the easement cover the area and limit what the extent of the construction is in that. But I do think to have two building sites that are very distinct on this property would be unfortunate. So I'd be happy to see it go forward on that basis. I also just need to talk for a moment about whether or not you can do really great habitat protection in a nature center. And I'm happy to take anyone out to Afton and show them the nature center that I've been the president of the board of for 30 years. And give you an idea of what happens when kids walk around during the day in a fairly limited manner and the amount of wildlife that's still there. It's not a problem to have foot traffic and kids or adults out in a natural area in terms of conserving the wildlife. And I think in the metro area, it's going to be a fact of life. You can't find projects in the metro area where you're not going to have people on. And I think we have to be doing projects in the metro area for the metro population to access. And I don't think it's a problem constitutionally to protect habitat that people also share. I think the focus on people, which is in your presentation, is the long focus. This is a habitat project. You're going to have people use a habitat project. You're not going to have a program for people that also has habitat. I think it's a fine difference, and I get where you're coming from, but we have to think about habitat first. But you can do habitat for people. You know, all of our easements are basic. All of the deed purchases allow hunting. What's the difference between having hunting on property that we protected with our dollars that's required constitutionally, and having, you know, folks walk around and look at oak trees and birds and buckthorn? I don't see the difference there. So I'm very comfortable with it. I think it needs to be a little tightening up, and I do think having one building site instead of two
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I represented Dakota County for 27 years as a lobbyist, and I've always had the greatest regard for the project they've done, and I've known Lisa and Al for years, and they do fabulous work. I am also a member of the Trap Shooting Club that sponsors a firearms training classes that the young people go to this property and do their projects and have some value. But, you know, I've got a little bit different hat here, and I feel some obligations. I think this is a great piece of property. It should be preserved. I have no problem with that. I don't think it ought to have buildings in it. I think that the buildings have to go. I do support move. I see the landowners have picked out a spot on his easement or his excluded part from the easement for that building, and that would be my preferred spot. I do think it's important that people be able to use this property. However, it won't be generally open to the public unless the three generations of landowners that own the excluded portion allow that to happen, but I think the habitat is very important to preserve. I do think we ought to have a management plan that talks about restoration. They've got some great spots for resort prairie. The property, and I toured the property, is absolutely choked with buckthorn, like a piece of property I own a few miles away. And I think that ought to be part of the management plan, as it is in most metro areas, to remove the buckthorn. But I think this is a good project. This habitat is phenomenal. It's unbelievable. And I think it's a project that's worth doing. But I think we have to massage it a little bit to make it acceptable. Thank you.
Representative McNamara.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I just wanted to clarify, as being a proponent of making and dealing with DNR approved appraisals for large projects in Mississippi Northwoods, and it being a thorn in my side when I wasn't sure that the first appraisal was right. Just coincidentally, it saved the state of Minnesota over $3 million because I was a thorn in Potlatch's side, so they're probably not real happy with me today. But anyway, just to clarify, you have to have a DNR certified appraisal. We can't go forward until that snafu is fixed, Mr. Chair. So I appreciate the discussion that we got a problem here and it's not a certified DNR appraisal. That's a problem that you and the state and the grants has got to work out. If you don't, too bad. Can we get that on the record that that's got to get taken care of? And whether you get that fixed or not, that's the only way this project can go forward. Is that true?
Mr. Chair and commission members, that's absolutely true. The county board resolution is contingent on having a certified DNR appraisal, and that is a requirement of your funding as well. And so we could not proceed without having that certified appraisal.
Thank you. I just wanted to be sure I understood that right, so that's got to get worked out.
And, Mr. Chair, just for the recollection of members, is that when this project was initially proposed, we had excluded the building area for some of the concerns that had been repeatedly raised, and we were directed by staff to put that back into the easement for the very reasons that Member Hartwell suggested, is that you have no control over what would happen in that exception area if it was excluded for the easement. And so we took the direction by this commission and also LCCMR, and that's why we arrived at this configuration that we have today. And so that's been part of a little bit of, the frustration on the part of the landowner of trying to figure out what the commissions and the funding sources find acceptable, and then finding out that it's no longer acceptable. And so that's sort of a problem. So we need some guidance from this commission about how we're going to be dealing with these kinds of nitty-gritty issues Commissioner Blackburn is right, is if we have to proceed with accepting out the building area, then we would have to redo the appraisal. On the other hand, it's possible that, and Mr. Granis has directed us, that if it's an absolute requirement not to have the building will not be located there, and it would be located in some other location. But that's really, you have to give us guidance about how to proceed. But I might also add is, you know, the county board, their mission is not necessarily just habitat protection. When they started, they wanted to have this be open to the general public. They have compromised because of the habitat concerns and the landowners' concerns, and so all public use is going to be through the educational programs. Well, if there's no building, there's going to be limitations to the educational programs that can take place or the public use. And so we're in a bit of a quandary about how to balance these different kinds of focuses or priorities. And so you need to give us sort of guidance and direction about how we should proceed under this circumstance.
Member Blackburn?
Thank you, Mr. Chair. The way that the current management plan and easement is written, we wouldn't have any control over whether or not they put in a five-story bright blue reflective building anyway. I mean, there's very little in there that controls much of anything. So I agree with Mr. Singer in that, you know, there has to be more control or direction about what needs to take place on this. I still believe that we shouldn't be buying nature centers. There are buildings on various properties because of what needs to happen as far as maintenance or things like that, and I believe that that's to be understood. But the purpose of the funds is for habitat, and that's not human habitat for nature centers. I don't have a problem with people using the property. I just have a problem with the building, that we're purchasing a building with habitat funds. And I know that there's the Dakota County match and the landowner match and there's all that kind of stuff. I don't like the precedent that it sets. I don't like having folks come forward and compare with previous things that apparently didn't get reviewed by Parkland or Nature Center or, you know, whatever that was. And I don't like what this sets up for the future. I don't want to have to be writing management plans for nature centers and what they might do for habitat. I just think that really is a really kind of a perverse use of what we should be doing here and focusing on. So I would still say that you have to get the reappraisal anyway, and the buildings can't be included, in my opinion, and that the management plan must be mandatory. And I just, for me, it's pretty simple that way. It's a great piece of property.
Representative McNamara.
Thank you. Member Blackburn, I appreciate and really respect where you're coming from, your expertise, and over all the years I've known you. But I want to qualify a couple of things. There's a significant match here that's well over values the parts of our concern. In other words, I'm trying to get to where we're not taking into account the value of what Dakota County and the property owner are putting forward on that small parcel. And that's why I didn't ever get hung up on it. I thought, well, the county's putting in a significant amount of money on that part. That seems to be, you know, that more than extends that parcel. I'm trying to understand. We should take into account when there's an app. And then, are we getting the habitat for the money we're putting in? I absolutely believe we are. Are there other things taken into account here that I would agree with you if we were the only one paying, which sometimes we are, this doesn't work. But it's a partnership, which I think in the metro, it seems like that's what we have to do to make it work. And the habitat we are getting is by far, I think, that a good value for what we're paying when we look at what we've been doing. your second. I actually forgot my second point. So I think, but again, Mr. Chair, I'll raise my hand. I know you've got a lot of people involved.
Just in response to that, I don't take the contribution or the match lightly. But if it's already there, then why can't Dakota County, and it might be that I just simply don't understand the situation, why can't Dakota County put the easement over that piece of property, which, by the way, has no habitat? That's the area that has the farm. So why can't they have their easement match be for that particular area so that they have it, which is what they wanted anyway. Originally, it sounds like they wanted this to be more of a park, that they wanted it to be public. So let Dakota County own that portion.
Mr. Chair, I would not want that, Member Blackburn, because we should have it, because we will put the controls on it, to Member Hartwell's point. I think the county, truthfully, they run a parks department. I don't want them to have control of that, because I think now we know how limited it's going to be, and I think, and then when we take into account the homestead, and you made mention about, I think we should be sure we understand what can happen to the homestead. That's a terrific limitations on that parcel going forward. If I'm not mistaken, there's only 4 different people that can ever live in there. It can't be improved. The county can buy it, and the price they pay assumes that it's all based on only the value of what's there. Because it's already, they're not going to pay for the protection again. We're getting all that protection for free. The reality and assumption would be that if that buildings get used, they would be only the way they are now. We don't need to worry about a 5-story purple building there. It can't be built there. And we normally don't get that restriction outside of our easement. And I think we are getting that here. So I think there's real value when we look at the whole thing and some of the extras that we're getting in it. Thank you.
Ms. West first, and Member Olson.
Thank you, Mr. Chair and members. I just wanted to speak to a couple things that I'm hearing. I think one thing we're talking about is this building. And I think what Al just said is, if you absolutely do not want this building on the property, Mr. Grannis has said he does not want to sacrifice his easement for this building, and he's willing to remove the building. We don't have to reappraise if we move the building, and we can move forward. The other thing I want to talk a little bit about is the Natural Resource Management Plan. I've heard several comments from the council about the fact that you don't know what's going to happen. There aren't these specifics in there, especially your comments. I just want to clarify, this is preliminary, and typically we don't even begin work on a natural resource management plan until after funding has been approved. This project has been in the works for so long that we have started on this, and there's been a significant amount of time and resources spent on this, which normally wouldn't even be spent at this point. But when that is, when we have a full preliminary, it will not only lay out the management strategies, but it will lay out a work plan for each year. This is what is suggested to be done. It will have an estimated budget in it. This, and we're happy to provide this to you at this point so that you can take a look at what this is shaping up to be. But this is not even a complete preliminary. There will be very, very specific things laid out in the Natural Resource Management Plan. And then the landowner agreement is where we do specify this is what the landowner is going to contribute, this is what the county is going to contribute. So there will be a lot of specifics, and those things are signed. Now, these things are not recorded, granted, but they are referenced in the easement. And if you look in the easement, the section that refers to the Natural Resource Management Plan, it talks about how that plan has to be developed. And then the very next section below that, the very next paragraph below that, talks about the landowner agreement. And there's actually years and estimated contributions from the landowner that are in the easement that is recorded. So there are quite a bit of specifics that are currently missing, but those are put in place for every single easement that Dakota County works on. This one included. This is just very preliminary. So I want to make sure. The last thing that I wanted to mention is When you're talking about this current building envelope that has this 1,500 square foot building, if you look in the easement document, the way it's currently drafted, it's very specific on the uses for that building and any potential upgrades. Even if that building stayed there and an upgraded building was built there, it can never become a residence. It can never become an apartment complex. So I think Representative McNamara is correct. Not only do we have restrictions on the homestead that's excluded from this easement, but we have quite a bit of restriction on this building envelope here as well.
Thank you. Member Olson and Member Kingston.
Thank you. Denny, I actually want to respond to a comment you made. Sorry. Let you know I'm doing it. You said when there's a lot of match, what we need to focus on is, are we getting the habitat for the money we're putting in? And I reached out a little bit inside my skin here, because if we use that logic, then anybody put in an ATV trail all over everything because they had good match. So if I think we need to be super careful as a council. It's not just say there's a really good match here, therefore we're gonna give them wiggle room, we're gonna give them a gray area, we're gonna let them do a little more than we would for somebody with no match, because the slippery slope on that is gigantic. And as many discussions as we've had about ATV trails and how that works, I want to make sure that we don't set the precedent for opening it up to crazy stuff.
Member Kingston and Member Hart.
I wanted to address Representative McNamara also. I wanted to thank you for emphasizing my point that there's no much, we're wasting too much time talking about this until the appraisal issue is done. And then very quickly to respond to hunting as opposed to other human activities. I view it as a matter of volume and frequency, and hunting has limited volume and frequency, and to the extent that other human activities are limited in volume and frequency, I don't have a problem with that. But I move that we move on with the agenda because we've doubled up on this one already and we're wasting time.
Member Hart.
So, I disagree with Daniel's math. If you want to have match with different purposes, because you have a match on a separate parcel, it can allow the match on the parcels if you want other activities. So I don't think that makes sense. I'm starting to think this is pretty simple. This is not going to go forward without the appraisal being approved. So I don't think we need to worry about that. I'm suspecting that there are plenty of projects to go through that have appraisal issues you never hear about. They're just simply get resolved. And knowing it has to be resolved, I'm not very concerned about it. I do think another reason not to have the county put an easement on some of it, and we, through the county, put an easement on another part of it, is that counties change their mind. New folks get elected. Once you have a grant that is requiring certain activity, you can't change that the way a county can change zoning or even change terms of engagement that they have paid for. So there's a real advantage for us to have an easement over the entire parcel. We can hold the county more accountable than the county itself. I think the grants that are willing to do this without a building site for this building. That's a simple deal. And let's approve this subject to no building sites.
Is that a motion?
That's a motion on the table from the last meeting. So I'm wondering, Danny, if you will withdraw your motion and allow me to make it.
I'll withdraw my motion.
So I would like to make a motion to approve this subject to the easement having no building sites for educational facilities on it. Knowing that the DNR has to approve the appraisal before we go forward.
I think Member Blackburn wanted to add one other. She had a suggestion.
A
restoration plan.
She said it's required.
That they require a restoration.
Well, that the restoration plan that's in there becomes a requirement to restore. We know that already. Right.
I can, I have a new machine which I can show you an app that is deep spot finder that you've never seen.
It's called a goat.
It goes faster than goats. I can pull off videos of it.
It's a shredder. It shreds up the roots.
Mr. Singh, members, my one question is, could the building be used for maintenance purposes? The existing building, could it be used for maintenance purposes, in other words, storage of equipment necessary to maintain the property, as opposed to removing the building and the costs associated with that?
My motion has nothing about enforcing the removal of the building.
So having accepted Member Harlow's motion is to have no building used for educational purposes and a new appraisal.
I don't think there's a new appraisal. Just simply approval of appraisal.
Okay, approval of appraisal. Thank you. Member Kingston.
Speaking of the motion, an amendment that I'd offer is that we have some idea of what activities are going to take place and an easement that isn't voluntary. Whenever that may happen, because you say that doesn't happen until after pending.
No, Mr. Chair and Commissioner. This is not the easement, this is a natural resource management plan.
I mean, the natural resource management plan has to be part of the easement. And
yes.
I want to know what it says and that it's mandatory.
That's not a standard report on any other easement with Hauser, with PNR, with Land Trust, with PNC, anywhere else. I don't think we can fix this out and say you have to do something that's different than what we've done before. But if we have to assume that it's in the easement referred to, there's a financial requirement here. Or we have to ask everybody to do something very different than what is standard practice, which I don't think is what is actually approved at these stages.
May I follow up? And I can't vote for it today, and I think we're wasting time, as I said before. I'd like to get the appraisal done, and then we can talk turkey. Or ducks.
There is a motion on the floor?
Yep.
Okay. Okay. And the motion has a friendly amendment, right? One friendly amendment?
One friendly amendment
that would you please restate the
wording in the natural resource management plan is that it's required to be implemented, not voluntary.
Okay, if everyone's clear on the motion, then
Mr. Chair,
please stand.
I'm trying to understand Commissioner Blackburn's requirement that restoration is mandatory. A property of this size, a restoration could be $1 million. So I'm asking whether all of the proposed management components of a management plan have to be completed by the landowner at the landowner's cost. If I'm understanding what this amendment is that the natural resource management plan is developed, it lists all of the activities that are recommended, and that, if I'm understanding this correctly, that all of those activities that are included in the management plan have to be completed. Is that what the intent of this friendly amendment is?
So, for clarification, right now, what you have in the management plan on page 6 is that the landowner is not required to implement all the recommended activities, that this is voluntary, and it's strongly encouraged, but voluntary on part of the current or future landowner. So what I'm saying is that you have to take out the voluntary part. It has to be implemented. We all know that. And you also have in here, which is, I believe, is absolutely the way to go about it. It's adaptive management. I don't think any of it needs to be done immediately. You've got a five-year plan. Obviously, it's dependent on funding. All those kind of things, all these projects have, many projects have restoration dollars that come forward. Or there's, I know there's already Pheasant Scrubber projects that are going on there that need funding from, wherever else there might be to do these projects. I'm just saying that it can't be voluntary. These things have to happen. That area that's currently in agriculture can't be in agriculture. You've got to do something about that. Buckthorn control has got to take place. Those things can't be voluntary. It's got to happen. So I'm not saying that every single thing has to be done within 5 years at the expense of the landowner. I'm saying it's got to be intentional, deliberate restoration.
And, Mr. Chair, with the landowner agreement and the $50,000 commitment by the landowner, a big part of that would be under the current agreement with the landowner. It's the voluntary part afterwards, so that's the tricky part, is how do you require a certain amount, the first phase and the second phase and the third phase, so we have to be very careful about what's mandatory, what's voluntary. And again, going back to Commissioner Hartwell's conversation, this is a very different standard than I'm aware of that have been placed on other easements in the past. And so if this is going to be a precedent, I think the commission needs to be very cautious and conscientious about what you're requiring.
Just for clarification, it is not a requirement to have a restoration plan. And the requirement, the additional standard would have been for that plan to come forward and for it to be part of that easement and for this council to approve it. I don't want to approve it. I'm just saying that something's got to be done, and I believe that, and I'm hoping that those projects that come forward that are used for restoration funds are actually to restore properties. I believe that's what most of these accomplishment plans are doing, is restoring habitat. I believe that the important language here is that it's not voluntary. The property cannot remain as it is. It has to be restored. That's what we're doing. We're building habitat in that.
But if I can clarify what I think you're saying, there has to be a plan, and you have to work that plan, but the plan timing isn't necessarily dictated. You've got to figure out what we need done in what period of time, but they can't voluntarily say, we have a plan, but we decided we're not interested.
That's acceptable.
Reasonable clarification.
That's acceptable.
And just to put on the record, you asked if it's at the landowner's expense. The Carpenter Nature Center, I understand, was successful in getting a CPL grant for buckthorn removal. I don't know if they're going to go rent David's machine or what they're doing, but to the point, there are funds available, and specifically it's the kind of habitat restoration that we do there. They're specifically doing that. I know that. So that's the kind of thing that I think we're asking to have happen.
We recognize that, Mr. Chair.
Are you ready for a vote on the question then? Call for roll call, or do we want to roll call vote?
Ms. Blackburn?
Yes.
Mr. Hartwell?
Yes.
Ms. Kingston?
No.
Representative Lilly?
Yes.
Representative McNamara?
Yes.
Ms. Olson?
No.
Senator Satsop?
Yes.
Mr. Tilley?
Yes.
Ms. Wilkins?
Yes.
Chair Anderson?
Yes.
Mr. Chair, that's 7 for yes, 2 no.
There being 7 for the motion and 2 is opposed, the motion carries, and hopefully have a path forward.
Thank you very much.
Thank you.
I just want to point out that part of the other piece that needs to be done is the budget shifts, which is number 2 on the staff memo. I don't want to miss getting that done because that's the important part.
that allows the budget shift. Have a motion by Member Hartwell to approve the comprehensive plan amendment that would allow the budget shifts. Discussion?
Yes.
All those in favor? Questions, please.
I can't approve an easement acquisition cost when we don't have an approved easement acquisition cost.
Just to ask, Mr. Chair, please. First point of clarification, this would be budget shifts. Any acquisition would still have to be within those bounds of the budget.
I understand.
Further discussion? Chair, then place the question. All those in favor of the motion to approve the accounts for the plan amendment, which would allow budget shifts, signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Those opposed, same sign?
No. Different sign.
Motion is carried. And the amendment is approved. Thank you.
Mr. Chair, one clarification. Amanda, the original vote on the roll call was 8-2.
For the record, yes, sir. Sorry, Mr. Chair. Numbers 8 for yes and 2 on that roll call vote.
Thank you. Further on the Grant's property covered it all. Thank you for your time.
We can take a quick break.
We will take a 15-minute break until 10:30. Thank you. Reminder to members of the council to use your microphones. Folks are having difficulty hearing here, as well as send your seats an email that those listening online can't hear without the mics being used. So be sure that we can use our microphones. Also have a request to, because several members have to depart early, to move the agenda around. If there's no objection, we'll move to item 8 first, and then item 8A, and that would be a discussion on the trail. So we'll go to those two items next, if there's no objections on the part of the members. All right. Proposal and hearing selection. Do we have anything to pass out further? Oh, okay. Sandy, can you read that? Thank you.
This is the time of year where members get to choose which proposals will be called in for hearing. In the staff memo, I just want to remind members the questions to consider are which proposals to hear, the length of the presentation, and I guess specifically, you know, does it come over here from contracts management and restoration evaluation that you see going on. In past years, it's been handled in various ways. There's 44 requests and a 20-minute hearing. We're about 18 hours, or a 30-minute hearing, we're about 26 hours. So. Also in the packet are some letters that we've received, and also follow-up information on a couple programs that were either requested by council members or submitted by our project managers. So you can put those in.
Is there a discussion with regard to time, Member Kingston?
I'd like to propose that we do a 20-minute hearing and make it 2.5 days, generally.
Member Hartwell?
I'd be delighted to do a 20-minute hearing.
20-minute hearing, can do it all in 2 days instead of 2.5. All right. It seems as though there's some consensus for 20 minutes, and We'll try to fit it into 2 days, but it might spill over into the third morning.
I think we should be more definite.
Okay.
What we've done in the past is we've had one day that was almost 11 hours. We had dinner brought in for members, and then the next day we could wrap up by 3 o'clock. That's how we handled it in the past. One long, and then long day.
Mr. Chair, we did a couple of things.
Yeah, that's kind of how we handled it.
All right, so we'll have one long day and the second day to finish. Member Blackburn?
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I'm probably the only one who actually would like to spend more time with the applicants. I think these are really important projects. So I would just ask that, you know, all council members make sure, especially based on review and further discussions we've had about discussions regarding trails that are coming up or easements or anything like that, that we get our questions to all of these proposers first so that they can address them at that. There's a lot of questions that came up after the fact afterwards, and I really want to make sure we prepare everybody for the questions that are going to come up during that time so that they can get through all our questions in those 20 minutes.
I think that's a great point. That would be very, very helpful to the proposers to have our questions ahead of time, if at all possible.
To Julie's point, there have been other questions that have been coming. As the answers to those questions and the questions themselves are brought to staff, we're trying to get them out to all the members. So please pardon us for the extra emails, but each one of them is important, and we'll give you more information.
Mr. Hartwell?
I think that's great, but I think that the questions that were raised or any other questions should be part of a packet that we're looking at as we're hearing these, not one email here and one email there that we all have to keep track of, just so that everything's present for everyone at the time of hearing.
To that point, we can go ahead and put those together. We will put those together in one final packet for you and get that to you ahead of the cut of the meeting as well as for me.
Okay. Excuse me, Member Wilkins.
I don't know if the discussion is about the days, because there are 3 days to set aside, but if you decide on 2 days, then I'm okay with you. If you decide on 2 days, if you could make them this later part of the week, there's a summit that I'm part of on Friday and Saturday, and I have some help at home during a period of time and to put everything together so that I wouldn't have to be asking for extra help that extra day. If we could do the last 2 days on the schedule, like that Wednesday, Thursday, instead of Tuesday, Wednesday, would be nicest for me. And it certainly will come the other 2 days if others decide the other days are better, but wanted to speak on the issue.
Member Hartwell, first.
So my only issue is I have to leave at 11:30 on Thursday.
So if I move to the latter 2 days,
did I miss Sunday?
Yeah. I'm sorry. Staff, Andy?
There's rumor of a special session, and we're not exactly sure on the dates of that. It may be the week prior to our hearings, but it is out of some flexibility, and if council members could just continue to reserve those 3 days so we don't get ourselves in a situation of having to reschedule, that would be very helpful.
23rd, 24th, and 25th of August, that's so we would start at 8 o'clock on Tuesday morning. Right now would be the plan. Pardon me?
Elizabeth asked for it.
I asked for
it.
24th
and he said he'd have to leave early.
Yeah.
Well, I can change. I can make an extra day work somehow.
Jane said hold all 3 days just in case.
All right, so we will
schedule 20 minutes and we will schedule it in a two-day period.
So I don't particularly want to hear about contract management or restoration evaluations, but I would want to hear a CPL request in response to the question earlier. Thank you.
Mr. Chair, when will we know which states they are? I mean, there's people that have to make travel plans and, you know, put schedules together.
I think it's probably going to, some of it's going to depend on the primary next Tuesday. I think that could have a play in when the special session is.
Mr. Chair, members, we have to post by next Tuesday. So I believe this Tuesday, correct, is the last day we can post for potential have members attend by phone if they wish or so on. So we'll be posting that as the 20, these 3 days, 23, 24, like that, unless we hear something prior. All the indications right now from every place I've been able to talk to are that if there's going to be a special session, they've been looking at for the third week of August. Which is a week prior to what we have here. But there's no one who knows for sure at this point.
Further on the proposal hearing and agenda? All right. Staff got enough information to move forward. Thank you. We'll move to, the next item is a request by Member Hartwell to have a discussion on trails.
Are we going to hear all the proposals? We ought to make a decision as to whether or not we're hearing all
the
proposals.
That was my understanding. They said 44, and so I assumed we were going to hear all, except that you said maybe we don't need to hear the.
We haven't had a discussion. I don't have anything, but are there any proposals that didn't meet the mark that anyone wants to not hear would be a discussion I think we ought to at least entertain. I don't know.
So we would not hear the DNR contract management for the restoration, but we would hear the CPL.
That was my recommendation.
I didn't hear any objection to that.
That was... You know, there may be a proposal in here somebody wants to say, I'm not interested in hearing at all. I don't know. I just didn't hear us say we want to hear all of the proposals.
Member Kingston?
Thank you. It wouldn't hurt my feelings if we didn't hear 01 and 02. But I'm not interested in hearing HRE 08. Which is Fairmont Lake Foundation Dutch Creek Habitat Restoration. If I may continue, because I don't think it meets our constitutional edict. I think it's a clean water project, and I think it's a private entity of limited habitat value.
Okay, we have a suggestion not to hear 01 and 02 and HRE 08. Member Paulson.
I'd actually like to hear HRE 08, but I'm good with not hearing 01 and 02.
Sorry, you got. Seems as though there's consensus done to have 01 and 02. And is there a motion on HRE 08, or do we want to Member Blackman?
Mr. Chair, what I would say is I also have significant concerns with HRE 08. And I'm actually wondering if maybe, you know, those of us that have concerns about it could just make sure that the proposer is aware of them and they can make the decision themselves of whether they wish to come here and get a proposal.
I think we have to consult with the council.
I think it's up to the council to decide who we hear, not voluntary from the proposals.
And member, I believe that you're, I understand that, and I believe that that's a good point, except for that they may have knowledge about why this is eligible, that we are not seeing a written proposal. Clearly, this is probably the first time they've written a proposal. And I think it would be, you know, for me, I'd like to say it sounds like clean water is very fine. And if they feel like they have a good response to that, I'd like to give them an opportunity to say so.
I think our standard for writing proposals should be adhered to, and if it doesn't meet what our, you know, our muster, then they should go back to the drawing board and reapply, as others have done.
I think that I guess the experience that I've had here is that there's, I think, some we've heard and definitely decided after hearing them that they were not we thought they should be to be considered, and we've heard some that we think probably didn't think they were reasonable to be considered, and yet turned out to be good projects. So I guess I would err on the side of hearing and not throwing somebody out at this point.
Oh no,
that's going on.
Member Joey. Mr. Chairman, I think the people who have put all the work into doing these proposals deserve 20 minutes of our time to hear their best shots. I'm willing to sit for that.
Okay, unless I hear a motion to continue with the 42 other items to be heard. Thank you. Further on the proposal evaluation? Yes.
I'm not sure if this is part of the objective, but previously, between our last meeting and this one, I asked for actual match realized by RIM projects, and Balzer has prepared a document showing what their historic match has been. And I think that going into the hearings, everybody should accomplish and know what it is. So I don't know if you want to look at it, if you have questions, or if you just want to incorporate it into your studies.
Staff will add this into the overall package before the next meeting.
So this would be added to the package for the for our meetings on the hearing the proposals. Thank you. Further on the item 8. Very good. We'll move to the discussion and synthesis with Member Hartwell asked that it's beyond the agenda. Folks have not, the public has not had an opportunity to see this on the agenda. We have a discussion on trails. We would not accept any motions at this time unless we're scheduled those for another meeting.
That's fine. Mark, do you have the documents?
Yes, I do. In fact, if I may.
Sure, please.
Members, Amanda handed out earlier this packet to you, and the front page says Minnesota Administrative Rules. I think that's the front page of it. And that's, it's about a half dozen pages of papers. I'm going to let Joe walk through it, but a couple of things for you just to let you know. We have been, at the last meeting, there was a request or a suggestion that DNR and the ATV of Minnesota at them come together at a future meeting and give a presentation on trails, what's been history, what's been, what's the current situation, how things better gotten better or worse, or so on, with regards to motorized trail use in Minnesota on public lands. We've been talking with them about that, and that will be happening at one of the future meetings. I'm not sure if it will be September or November. We haven't come to
a date on that. So that may add further information to this. The other thing is that as we get into reviewing the three, the next thing on the agenda, which will be the actions on the Cass County's proposal and NDHA's proposal on the city at large, those we'll be getting some trail information on that too that may feed into this also. So with that, it's okay with Chair and Liz, Joe, just go through these materials.
Mr. Chair and members, so the fact that you have before you, the first few pages, it's titled Minnesota Administrative Rules, 6100.1950, Motor Vehicles and Snowmobiles, Forest Lands. And this is just something that we got printed off a couple days ago that haven't really had a lot of chance to analyze it. But it seems to be that a lot of the questions regarding trails is around the forest, and a lot of more of the trail uses focused on trails and ATVs. So I thought it would be good to get this in front of you. And you can read that. This is state administrative rules. And then just to get a different take on it, we also took some information from the U.S. Forest Service. Because obviously they have lots of land up north, and in here it talks, it has definitions on trails and snow trails, water trails, design use, whole 4 or 5 pages on that that talks about design and gives you a better understanding of where they're coming from, those trails. And then, in addition, we have Member Hartwell's comments on trails, and you can see the definitions there that Member Hartwell came up with. And then, also, LASARD staff had come up with some draft trail language. And again, this is just draft. We weren't prepared to present this, but this is something for you to consider as well. I think the question comes down to, what's the intended use of the property? Is the intended use for wildlife habitat, or is it for motorized recreation? I think that's what we're trying to get at here. So, putting some language in there that gives everybody assurance that the acquisitions or the use of OHF is for wildlife and not specifically or primarily for recreation. I think there's something that we could probably do there. It's just a matter of what's the exact language and does it meet everybody's expectations.
Member Hurt.
Yeah, so I think all of this is good. I'm not told that my definitions are the right definitions, but I think it really is important for us to come up with a definition and to make very sure that when we approve a project and we approve an accomplishment plan, we and whoever is receiving the money understands what they're committing to and what's allowable and what's not allowable. So we never have a Mississippi Northwoods type program again. So I just think before we make allocations this year, we should be very clear on what we're allowing and not allowing in terms of this, and certainly on the accomplishment plans that it's disclosed. However we come up with the final definition, what's going to happen on that property with regard to the trail? Because then we will know in advance, and we won't have the debate, and won't be surprised. Take a look at what I wrote up. We can talk about it at another time, but I think it's important to have the discussion and come up with a specific definition for what we're expecting going forward. And we're going to make exceptions. There will be exceptions that we ought to make on certain parcels based on the fact of the parcel and stuff, and that's fine as long as we're in advance clear on what it is.
Excuse me, Member Rosen, please.
Thank you. I believe that's a good comment, and there's a designation for trails on different types of acquisitions, SMAs.
You know, there's the DNR has designations of trails. There's so many different types of designation or trails that, and what David has put forth is certainly something for consideration. One thing that surprises me, and I will speak to it now because I'm going to be looking for this at the hearings and we talked about questions, and it refers to trails. Every once in a while I'm hearing that we need to define the trails, and I'm thinking, wait a minute. Every person who's a project manager out there is asking for money to so that they can enhance and restore whatever habitat. And if they have the kind of smarts that they can do that, they also have the kind of smarts to define the trails that belong in that habitat that maximize that habitat. So I find it really strange that they're asking us to define trails that really they should be defining by virtue of their position in the conservation community. So when you come to a hearing, please come prepared to address exactly where the trails will be and what type of trails they are, because you can be assured that some of us are going to mark and and score depending on what you say about the trails, because we're all thinking about this now. Now maybe by next year we'll have something more clearly defined, but for these hearings I think that we expect more of you than something that says you want ultimate flexibility. That we really need you to define what is the best type of trail that enhances, restores, and respects, protects habitat. You know exactly what that looks like. Maybe your county board doesn't like that definition, but you know exactly what that looks like. Bring that to us, please, along with a map that shows exactly where those trails are. And if there's going to be any additional ones, instead of like on your proposal, say, yeah, there might be, but we don't want utmost flexibility. No. Tell us where you think those will be. You're going to be the ones writing the conservation easement and the restoration plans. You define that. Please. And thank you.
Member Cody.
Well, thank you, Mr. Chair. I think Councilman Hartwell has taken a step in the right direction in the definition of the trail. However, as I'm sitting here thinking, I don't think it's the trail per se that is what our real issue is. It's the concentration of trails. And along with definitions, maybe we ought to have a ratio, 1 mile of trail for 100 acres or 1 mile or for 200 acres, and of certain kinds of trails. A big chunk of Minnesota, for all intents and purposes, cannot be accessed without the use of trails. When we're restoring and maintaining and protecting habitat, a big chunk of what we're doing that for is to give people access to it. I prefer to spend most of our money on fee access, because then I know it's open to hunting and fishing and used by the public. There's good reason for easements, but I prefer the other. But if we're preserving all this land and people can't get to it to use it, we're providing the habitat, but we've got to balance that with the ability to use habitat. So I think, along with the designation of trails, we ought to pick out ratios of how much trail to how many acres, so that we have an idea of the impact of those trails on that property. I think that should be a part of the mix. Thank you.
Member Olson.
I just want to make a comment before I forget on the information that we got passed out mid-morning. There's one document called LSOHC Staff Draft Trail Language. In the fourth line, there's the phrase wildlife-dependent recreation activities. I don't know what that means, and I would suggest that you find something a little more specific or give that a definition. You could drive a truck through that. You could drive a lot of ATVs through that too. So I would rephrase that. Otherwise, it's not bad.
I think David did a pretty good job on what these definitions would be. I think that for the public out there, the council's concern is the use, not necessarily that there is a trailer, there isn't a trailer, but what are you using it for and how it's going to impact that little gem that we're trying to protect. So don't play smart, don't play cute, and don't say utmost flexibility ever again. Be warned. But we are really interested in how the trail used, to the extent that there is a trail, how that's going to impact the property, and whether you're going to let that continue to get larger or not. Paul.
Executive Director Johnson.
Thank you, Chair. Member Olson, thanks for those comments. We'll take that part and put it in. As we mentioned, this was just an attempt for something to start. And with that, David had made another suggestion that it isn't changed on this one. That's in the very first line, about in the middle, it says new trails, and he suggested removing the word new. And I think that's appropriate, because it should be redundant trails, period. And there may be other things within this. Or if you have a whole different take and you decide we need to go a whole different set of direction, that'd be fine for us to consider, and we'd be glad to do that.
And I would just ask staff if you would take and review the regulations under FSC and SFI. I think they may well fit under subpart 1 of the administrative rules that you handed out, but just to be sure that because they do gate some roads and trails up north from time to time, and just so we make sure that we know what that is. Other thoughts or comments at this time with regard to trails? More to come. Thank you. Let's move back to item number 6 on the agenda, and excuse me, I'm going to ask Member Blackburn to lead us in some of her first thoughts on asking for this to be on the agenda.
I'm not sure if I should say thank you, Mr. Chair, but we've had a lot of discussions about easements earlier today. And we will when we're going through our reviews and proposals and moving into the future. And, it's probably not a surprise to anybody that I'm a fan of easements after seeing what it does through our RIM programs. But I also think that there's a lot of potential issues that there could be with easements. And it seems like the more I learn, the more kind of confused I get about what we should be doing and what we should be looking at and how we should be evaluating it. There's no doubt that easements are incredibly important to our work. We would not be able to get conservation in this state without having private landowner easements. That's the bottom line. But what happens with those easements, and what about the monitoring, and what about these multiple uses? And we've had the discussion of nature centers coming up, and what's the acceptable use on that, and what about ATVs, and what about forests, and what about just all of these different kinds of uses, and what's really acceptable? And I started to get very concerned about at what point do we evaluate something as it's really about public access, or it's really about getting private nature centers to have access to outdoor heritage funds. Which purpose is primary in their concern? Is it about habitat, or is that secondary? How do we even know if some of these are going to, for instance, nonprofits that are? What I heard earlier is Representative Magner saying he didn't even know that money was going to one of the nature centers that was for a project that was funded here. Well, do we really know where these easements are going when they are going through programmatic kinds of proposals that we're reviewing? I just have a lot of questions
sometimes things, and I have really not a lot of clarity on this, and I'm trying to talk to a lot of people to help me gain clarity about what does it mean when I get that kind of uneasy feeling in my stomach about this just feels wrong, and why does it feel wrong, and how do I identify that, and try to figure out, okay, at what point are we incentivizing subsidies to private landowners to do various things that maybe are not consistent with the outdoor heritage statutory constitutional language. And I don't know how we review that right now. I don't know how we evaluate monitoring in perpetuity and on private easements for programs that aren't established particularly. I have a lot of questions about it, and I think when I was talking with Executive Director Johnson, he put together this piece of information about just kind of all the questions that keep coming forward. What is that allowable use? And at what point does it kind of tip away from outdoor heritage fund purposes to something else? And how do we evaluate that? I don't know. So I guess what we had talked about is maybe having a working group to try to identify a little bit more, clarify what the expectations are, what those kind of allowable uses are, or maybe not. Maybe that doesn't need to be defined. I've talked to other board members and they say for every single proposal we need to really understand clearly all of those different components, but I still feel like there needs to be a more general discussion, I guess, about easements.
Thank you. Executive Director Johnson.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Members, in the memo that was put together, basically we tried to put together some background for you. As Julie mentioned, about 30% or 31% of the funds so far have been spent for easement acquisition, and that's about $220 million and about 230,000 acres across the state so far, or at least it's been appropriated, and it's not all been spent yet. Our estimates are, look through the land acquisition report, anticipating that this will continue, and that'll be about 440,000 or so acres within the likely of the fund that will be put into this area. It's quite obvious from our discussion with regards to Dakota County that easements are very important to the council, that understanding easements is something that the council and each of us has different levels of. And with regards to our guidance from statute, there's not a lot of guidance on how we're supposed to implement those easements. There are a lot of nuances and specifics that aren't fully understood here. So we tried to put down some considerations below, and please, this is not at all, the first three questions aren't at all to pick on Dakota County. Please bear with us on that. These are questions that came up as we were talking. But probably question four is where it starts getting into more nitty-gritty. What's the allowable uses, as Julie had mentioned? And when you think of allowable uses, that's agriculture, it's trails, it's all kinds of things, other recreation. Even the simple question of should restoration and enhancement on OHF purchase easements be mandatory or simply encouraged or voluntary? We don't have that as a baseline. And whether we need it as a baseline or whether it's just an unspoken and it's put into the accomplishment plans is something that would be interesting to know the council's feedback on. The habitat values that are returned, and then the very last one, number six on the back side, is certainly not the least, and it's what are the minimum acceptable benefits to the additional wildlife habitat that are expected with each easement. I'm sure that many of the partners who currently purchase easements have different views of that, and would have different input to that as well. So with this, what we put in for a discussion item, basically, the potential of moving staff initiate an enhanced or an easements working group, and that could be, I'd like it to, if we have it, I'd like it to include council members. I'd like also to include stakeholders and also get some guidance from the legislative staff as we go, if we move in that direction too. But again, to assemble some easement guideline recommendations for the council.
Member Herbaugh.
Thanks. You know, I've
worked with easements for 30 years now. I did my first easement in 1986 in Montana. And we read it and thought, oh my God, what did it do? The technology's changed a lot. And I spent 5 years on the Land Trust Accreditation Commission looking at how we accredit organizations that hold easements. The scary part of that is that everybody thought they were doing a great job until it was looked at closely, and then it wasn't quite as clear. But one of the things not on your list, Mark, is probably the most important thing, which is what is the plan in the long term to monitor and enforce the terms of the easement? Easements are a great tool because you don't have the obligation to own and manage the land, and you're not paying fair market value for them, so you're getting more bang for the buck. But if the organization holding the easement doesn't go out there and look at it, and then doesn't have the wherewithal and the fortitude to bring legal action when necessary to enforce the terms of it, it's a useless easement. The standard in the land trust industry is they should be monitored every year. But we see Bowser and DNR wanting to monitor 3 to 5 years. And I'm not going to say that they're wrong, but there's more risk the longer you wait between visits to see if someone is in violation. I think that the issue of adequate funding to fund the long-term stewardship and monitoring is important. I know the land trust has a dedicated fund for that, and our easements have paid into that fund. I see in a lot of the proposals we're looking at the money's going into a fund. I'm a little concerned about where that fund is and how it's managed and what it can be used for when it comes to a government agency. I think of the tobacco settlement money and how that didn't go to the tobacco prevention when the legislature got it in pink. And I think it'd be really interesting for us to look at that and understand that. Personally, I'm a great proponent of the money not being something that can be touched unless it's for the desired purpose and putting parameters around that and making sure we do that. I think the issue of restoration and enhancement is a good one. There are some properties where you don't need any restoration and enhancement and others where you do. So I don't think you should need a one-size-fits-all strategy, but we ought to think about it because an easement on a property that's nothing but buckthorn and will always be nothing but buckthorn probably isn't a pretty habitat project. So I think the discussion is worth having. I think we're doing most things pretty well, and we can probably find ways to ensure that we're doing them better by having the discussion and including stakeholders in the discussion, and would be happy to participate if you want me to.
Other thoughts or comments with regard to easements and the working group? I think we find some inconsistency, but maybe well placed also, in that the forest land easement that we have with I'm not sure if it's Brandon for sure, but the Potlatch, those lands are open to the public for use for hunting, yet the ones that we get easements on around Camp Ripley, they're closed to the public for use and no hunting. And maybe, I don't know, does the owner get to hunt on that property? So I think that there's certainly some differences there to be considered also. So the staff will be assembling a easement working group.
and bringing together and inviting the members of the council to participate. Further thoughts or comments with regard to easements? Thank you. We'll move to item number 7 in the accomplishment plans. And the first is the forest lands and cash pump.
First up, if you could, we have Mr. Titus and Josh and Kirk, if you could come down, please. As we remember at the last council meeting, there was a request for these three appropriations listed at EDNC to bring in their, or to bring and potentially discuss their plans and friends regarding trails. So if I could have you two gentlemen here with the Cass County and the very first one here. Also, there's some all over up this into the next one, the Jack Pine Forest acquisition one. But if you could introduce yourselves, please, and present if you'd like that.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Members of the council, my name is Josh Stevenson. I'm with Cass County, and I'm the recently appointed administrator that's taking over for our administrator that will be retiring later this year. And with me is Kirk Titus, who is the Cass County Land Commissioner.
Yeah. And with regards to your, with regards to county use for trails and county accomplishments and trails, and we discussed earlier, that you would give us a small overview and a presentation about how you view trails and how you work with allow use or disallow use. You have, within your county management plan, you definitely have outlined trail uses and trail parameters of all different types. So if you could please discuss that with us, I'd appreciate it.
Mr. Chairman, I guess I'll start with a kind of a brief overview of how we manage county forests. We've been public land managers in Cass County for over 60 years. Cass County is not a parks department. We are forest management. We manage forest habitat. We manage over 255,000 acres. It's a balanced approach. Our primary focus is forest management. We've made that very clear to local businesses. We have no interest in competing with private landowners, resorts, the U.S. Forest Service, who runs several developed campgrounds within our county, and as well as the state of Minnesota, who has several developed recreation sites. In regards to forest access roads, they are integral to our forest management. And we do not preclude or ask the public not to use those forest access roads to access their property. We have some designated trails within the county. If you look, we are a partner with the state of Minnesota on Grant Lake Trails. And I would encourage you to read, hopefully this is in your packet, the two excerpts out of our forest plan that specifically detail recreation facilities and trails and forest access roads. Some of it, I think, just listening to the discussions that have been taking place between the council, some of the things that I think you should keep in mind when we're talking about trails, Cass County is quite unique in regards that it's right in our management plan. Some of the things that in fact, on page 38, under our recreation trail policy, number 5, hopefully that's in front of you, it's right in our plan that motorized recreation scramble areas, hill climbs, mud runs, etc., are deemed inappropriate for public forest lands and are not to be allowed. That has been in our forest resource management plan since it was adopted in 2003. We have had numerous conversations with a wide variety of user groups, AFAM and some local ATV clubs that we're not into that. We are a forest habitat management entity. We are not interested in developed recreation. We don't want to compete with our other public land managers, and we certainly don't want to compete with private property owners. As you're aware, this is our seventh year that we, again, thank you for funding our program. We think it's going quite well. If you look at where we're at, we have spent all of our money through Minnesota Law Year 14. We're just about done with 15. In fact, we have two parcels that have been appraised. We've got some title issues we're working on. We're hoping to show up if we get a hearing this fall. It was kind of our hope that we would show up and be able to say we're out of money. We're doing what we said we were going to do, and we're going to move forward. Certainly in the 7 years that the program has been going, the council is familiar that this is not an old question. The whole concept of trails on public property has been going on for over 60 years. The uses continue to change. Back 60 years ago, motorized recreation was jeeps. It was four-wheel drive vehicles for those that were fortunate enough to afford them. Today, it seems like everyone has an ATV. They're using them to follow the driveways, they're using them to make food plots. It's another mode of transportation. It's another use that we see on our public forest lands that will continue. 10, 15, 20 years from now, it may be hoverboards, it may be people sit on their couch and enjoy their public land through a drone or some other electronic device. We're never going to be able to guess what trails will continue to change and evolve into over time. And that is a big deal for us in Cass County, because if you read our Forest Resource Management Plan, it's a 100-year plan. We're buying property with your money under the assumption we're going to continue to manage this for at least 400 years. So it makes me a little nervous as a public land manager when we hear discussions about, well, we're going to define what trails are, and we're going to say this is what's acceptable and this is what's not acceptable. No, maybe you guys must be way smarter than we are, but we have no idea what's coming next. We're doing the best we can. It's right in our plan. We've been through bumps in the road. Everyone probably knows what Spider Lake is and what happened with that. That was right at the beginning when we became certified by the Forest Stewardship Council. That framed a lot of the discussion and a lot of the language and policy that's in our Forest Resource Management Plan. That was something. Spider Lake came up by people that live in Cass County. The majority of the people that were upset about Spider Lake were homeowners and people that lived in Cass County, or they own recreation property in Cass County. They didn't like what they see. We have a tendency of listening to the people that own the property when we write our plan, and that's why the plan is written the way it is today. So in our opinion, the overall concept of trails, I would say please don't love them to death. Don't get carried away on language. If we see, and I can speak on behalf of our county board, if we start seeing language that says, this is what a trail is defined as, this is what's going to happen now, this is what's going to happen in the future, it would not surprise me one bit when we go back to the county board with the contract, they will respectfully decline to continue the program. They are not going to tie the hands of people 3-4 generations out as to what a trail is with these deed restrictions. We're going to rely on what we have learned going through 60 years of being public managers and what that is. The other comment I would make is that I really hope you don't hold Kirk's former employer against him. I think the way our resource management plan is written, I know the way it's written, we are attracting people that are very interested in managing forest habitat. They are not interested in developed rec. They are not interested in pumping toilets. They're not interested in managing all the stuff that goes along with developed recreation. Cass County is very unique. As you are aware, a lot of our neighbors have not taken the position we have. We are not interested in being a parks department. We say that way more often than we say anything else when it comes to user groups. The other thing, I guess, that I would add, you know, in regards to our partners, I'm very glad to see that, you know, again, we're unique. That's why we have so many partners. We've partnered with Ducks Unlimited. We've partnered with the DNR. We now have new partners, the Minnesota Deer Hunters Association and the Mississippi Headwaters Board. Regardless of whose money we are using, the rules are the same. It's still, we have to follow our Forest Resource Management Plan. In regards to trails, what we have seen now is it's passive use. We have a reluctancy, believe it or not, by members of the community to designate trails. It's one of those things where I own recreational property or I live here year-round. I'm not interested in signs. I'm not interested in maps. I'm not interested in inviting a whole bunch of people up here to use this. The forest access road systems that are in place can get you where you want to go. And unless you're being unruly or out of control, you're welcome to do that. And if you are being unruly and out of control, we have a lot of law enforcement in Cass County that would love to talk to you. And that's not just our deputies, it's also conservation officers. So that would be, I guess,
the Leech Lake Band.
Thank you, Senator. And the Leech Lake Band, who also watches this very closely. And they're also a partner with us that has intermingled ownership in amongst Cass County fee-owned and tax-broker property. Thank you. Kirk, do you have anything to add?
No, I don't, but I think Josh said it very well and covered all of our necessary points, and we'd be glad to answer any questions that the council may have.
Member Kingston.
Thanks for coming. I appreciate your passion and your experience, and I think you do a really good job of expressing your professional opinion. And I would ask that you favor us with the same respect that I don't see any tie between any other project and yours other than trying to be consistent statewide, and that the difference between state OHF funding and county funding, there is a difference. So to pretend like there isn't is unrealistic, and that's asking us to not represent what we're supposed to represent. That being said, I'd like to know what you could say to speak to the history of phases 1 through 6 in terms of how much new or expanded trails have occurred on parcels that were accessed with OHF funds. You know, I don't know if you have that number off the top of your head. You probably don't. But that's what I'd be interested in. And what would it mean to you if we were to impose language like what was just proposed by staff, such as OHF acquired lands, existing trails may continue current use or expanded if they're consistent with appropriation, approved accomplishment plan for the purpose of habitat management and primarily benefit wildlife. Any existing or proposed trail not meeting all of the criteria must receive prior review. So, two questions. What's the history then, phases 1 through 6? And what would this language mean to you going forward, including this year's, you know, Minnesota Laws 2016?
Mr. Chairman, Member Kingston, I guess I can address that. The history of phases 1 through 6, we have not built any additional trails or forest access roads. If we have, it's been in the purpose of timber management, so it would be a short spur, perhaps to go to a landing. And as it's written in our Forest Resource Management Plan, we like to keep our main arteries intact. A lot of our main arteries, these are our haul roads, we keep those intact and we spend money on them. We spend about $10,000 a year grading these, adding fill, stabilizing them, replacing culverts, etc. Because it's an integral part of our forest management plan to be able to move forest products. Right, clearing them, etc. On the same note, we encourage grant aid trails to follow major arteries for two reasons. We're no dummies. If a snowmobile club or an ATV club is also maintaining the major artery, we don't even have to send anybody out there after a windstorm to clear trees, because within 48 hours, they're all gone.
48?
I won't comment on that. But, so a lot of to get to the first question, phase one through six, we don't have any new trails. So everything that's out there has been existing forest access roads, and a lot of these parcels that we've acquired. You know, we're going to be honest with you. One of the main reasons we looked at them, besides the habitat function, was they already had a road on them that was going to existing public land. And a lot of these, we had been partners with the previous owner, be it Potlatch or some other private landowner, for decades. And we've said, hey, we heard or read in the paper, Grandpa passed away. Kids, what's your plan with this? Are we going to be able to continue to use the road to get in there, or what do you think? And that's how a lot of these discussions start, as to whether or not this is a parcel that the county may be interested in acquiring, whether it's using OHF funds or not. What the OHF funds have done is it's accelerated and given us a lot more options to act on this quickly. We were losing them left and right because we didn't have enough money in our budget to tackle. So we do thank you again. For 6 years now, we haven't lost hardly any access. If we have, it's not because of money. It was some other thing. The kids couldn't get along, or something happened there where it wasn't anything to do with us. It definitely wasn't a funding issue. So, again, we thank all of you for that. That has resulted. I did a quick check, too. We're coming up on about 2,000 acres that we've bought with OHF money, which has opened up over 10,000 acres of existing public land to year-round management access. So that allows us to do, you know, and again, it wasn't that we were building roads. It's now we actually have permission to use the road that's been in place for 50, 60 years.
Could you incorporate that into your 20 minutes in a couple of weeks?
Sure.
Okay.
To answer your next question in regards to existing use on the trails, I don't see an issue with that at all. But one thing I would say is, you know, on our forest access roads, we do have, there are ATVs, there are side-by-sides, there's Jeeps, there's logging trucks. A lot of people use these major arteries. They're travel corridors is how I would define it. A lot of people that live in our communities or own seasonal recreation property, it's fun for them in the fall to let's go from Hackensack down to Leader. And, you know, it's an A to B destination, the same way as a logging truck needs to get from the landing to the highway. That's what a lot of this use is. And often, every single grant-made ATV trail that's been approved by the county board, and I won't get into the details of this, but if you read the policy on there, if the local unit of government doesn't agree to it, you know, so if the neighborhood, the people that live around there don't want this, the board doesn't do it. And we've said no way more times than we've said yes because of that. So I would say is just be careful with the language. You know, if it's existing uses, just remember that, you know, does that mean, for example, we are not going to condone a grant-made trail on a piece of property that was acquired with outdoor heritage funds? I can guarantee you, if the answer to that is yes, we will be respectfully declining a additional grants. We can't tie the hands of future generations on public property that way. There's got to be some faith on behalf of this council. When you're awarding money to entities like Cass County that have been managing public property, I think you guys have been together for 8 years. We've been managing public property for 6 years. There's got to be some good faith effort that we trust you. We definitely get the intent of where you're going with this, but I would recommend please don't tie the hands of your program managers or anybody that you're giving money to just say, grant-made trails are off the table. Because if you read our plan, it's right in there. We have no interest in designating any trails, period, unless there's grant-made funding or some other state sponsored program that goes along with it for two reasons, and it's right in the plan. Number one, we don't want the liability, and number two, that is our guarantee that we're in this together. It's not just the county imposing a trail on somebody. We've got a user group or a group of volunteers that have said, this is important to us, we've sold it to the community, and we have the backing of the state to do that. So I would say, you know, if it's not a good proposal, the state of Minnesota, who runs the grant and aid program, won't fund it. So don't worry about it.
Can I assume that your county lands are all under SFI or FSC designation?
Mr. Chairman, they are all under the Forest Stewardship Council, and we were very happy that we just passed our 15th year last summer. And the discussions that I've had with our new land commissioner and the county board is we have no intention, again, of ending that program unless they get weird and start making us do things that we don't think are appropriate for managing forest habitat.
I'd also like to draw folks' attention to page 38 and the paragraph just above the recreational trail policy that speaks to the new trails or redevelopment of existing ones. And I think you outlined some very good reasons or why you would take and establish a new trail or redevelop an existing one. I think you very well stated that. Thank you.
Mr. Chairman,
please.
I'd like to move approval.
Motion by Member Tilley to move approval of the comprehensive plan for the forest land of Cass County. 27. Discussion? Further discussion? All those in favor of the motion signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Those opposed, same sign. Motion is carried. Comprehensive plan is approved. Thank you.
Thank you very much. We really appreciate coming down here, and we really appreciate the time on your agenda today.
Thank you very much.
Thank you. Jack Pine Forest, Colwing River, and that's Craig.
Good morning, Mr. Chair, Council members. It's Craig Engwall, Executive Director of the Minnesota Deer and Range Association. As our project partners with both Cass and Hubbard County, and Josh and Kirk did such a nice job on speaking to the acreage that we would have involved in Cass, and I'll let that speak for itself. And I'll speak to Hubbard County and the Land Department many times. Much of what Josh and Kirk said dovetails exactly what Hubbard County is doing. The Land Department in Hubbard County manages somewhere over 135,000 acres of land. It's structured very similar to Cass County. They manage their land for multiple uses, with forest being the predominant management activity. Trail use on those lands has been coordinated with the DNR planning processes in the past. In fact, in the packet you have, I included Hubbard County Ordinance 36, which governs OHVs on Cass County Tech Hubbard County Administered Tax Forfeited Lands. And the purpose of that ordinance is to protect the long-term sustainability of these lands and provide management strategies that are consistent with those strategies adopted by the Minnesota DNR. So when they did their planning process for the forest, they were locked right into the DNR OHV processes that went on at the same time. Well, one of the aspects of that further in their ordinance is that these lands are classified as limited, and that's a term of art in DNR trail terminology in the forest. Limited means that OHVs can only go on trails and roads that are posted open. It's a more restrictive management structure than what's called as managed, which is a lot of it north of Highway 2. Managed means OHVs can go on trails unless they're posted closed. So Hubbard County has taken a more restrictive, limited approach to their trail system on county-administered lands. Interestingly, when I went and met with county and townships a number of times, and they're very interested in appropriate management. So at that time when I went there, our proposal involved the possibility of MDHA holding lands within the county. And the sheriff was actually there, and he was very focused on asking about managed use on managed lands and how we would manage ATVs. So at that time, the county was engaged, was looking at what we would do. We ultimately now are not going to hold any lands as part of this project, but it shows how the county looks at what's happening on the landscape in Hubbard County and how much they care about it. I had a couple maps I handed out, and I wish I would have labeled them, but there are only two of them, so they're pretty easy to track here. And I wanted to talk about these. We're looking at acquiring 320 acres with project funds in Hubbard County. The remainder would go to Cass. And these are those parcels. So there are two of them. The first one I have you look at does not have the green on it. It has a hash mark parcel right in the middle of the page in section 34. And I'd like to speak about this 80 in Lake George Township. And it really represents what this project's all about and the challenges that are in the forest. So that's a potlatch 80 that we hope to acquire. It's embedded within a whole bunch of county tax forfeit administered land. It's a very unique parcel in that it was private. There are three water bodies on it. There happens to be a non-motorized trail that starts county tax forfeit land, goes through this parcel, and continues on in county tax forfeit. Immediately adjacent to it, to the north and east, is the North County Scenic Hiking Trail with a campsite right by the site. It's a really neat spot, and it's one we targeted as keeping the forest blocked and intact. So that's good, great parcel. But if you look to the northeast above there, there's another 80 that's private. We had hoped to acquire that from Potlatch to continue this block because of all the benefits that are in this other 80. And that was too far down the pike in their retail sales program, so we couldn't bring it into the project. And so it just kind of highlights how we're looking at trying to block up land that has meaningful multiple benefits, forest management, some recreation, but now that parcel could be a challenge in the future. It's private. They could, if somebody builds in there, they'll be seeking demand for county services. They could have power, you could have other things coming in an area that would be much better suited for both habitat and forest management if the state is forest land to be managed. So that just kind of highlights one of the parcels there in Clay and Hubbard County. And the other map is just to illustrate, these are literally the only lands in Hubbard County, so that's why I'm bringing them all here too. But we have 240 acres that completes a block that there's state land to the west and county tax forfeit to the east. There are no trails on this particular parcel. There's a trail that splits the state land and this private land. That's a minimum maintenance state forest road. But other than that, there are no trails. There are no potentials to develop trails. Other than, I will point out that the county has used the grant aid program. I think the last sponsored trail that they approved, which went through the DNR process, was in 2014, but they followed much the same guidelines that Josh and Kurt outlined. So we're very confident in their management that these are good habitat projects, and we ask that you approve our accomplishment plan, which we hope you sure will.
Thank you. Question to Amber Kingston.
To be consistent, I'd ask you the same two questions that I asked Cass County. You don't have a history, so you get a buy on the first one.
Mm-hmm.
But what would be a position of the language? You understand what the proposed language was and what that would mean to your project?
I do, and Mr. Chair, Member Kingston, the concern about specific language would be if it has a chilling effect on the county's wanting to the state. We don't want to mess with that, because if grant and aid isn't a possibility, and I think that language could be worked so that it's not inconsistent with the regular grant and aid process, I don't think it would be a problem. I'm not going to speak to that exact language. I think there is language that can work, because I believe in both programs. I work, you know, with DNR and how the grant and aid process works. I see how multiple use in the forest is part of what it is. I live it where I am, almost in Cooch. I'm in the northern Itasca area. that if you really put on significant restrictions to say Unfair Heritage Fund dollars can't go to fund projects that would allow some use that's not harmful, that would start to create a problem, and I don't think the counties wouldn't want to go along in that. So I think the language can be worked to accomplish that purpose. But it's a concern if it gets too restrictive, and it's all like, I sound like the lawyer, but it's all in the language.
Ms. Chairman,
please. Thank you. I also would like to be consistent. I'd like to move approval.
Motion by Member Tilly to approve the accomplishment plan for the Jackson Report for the River Watershed. Discussion? Hearing none. All those in favor of the motion to approve, signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Those opposed, same sign. Motion is carried.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, Council members.
Council plan is approved. Thank you. And Mr. Terrell on the Mississippi Edwards. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman and members of council. I'm Tim Terrell, Executive Director of the Mississippi Headwaters Board. I have with me here Bob McGillivray from the Trust for Public Land. Just a little bit about our proposal. It was our first proposal last year. We talked about it. One of the things that I just wanted to mention to you that might help set the context about what is going on is that if you turn and you look at the purpose of this proposal was to protect the habitat on the Mississippi River, the headwaters, lakes, and reservoirs, and connecting corridors and tributaries. Pretty consistent with that. But interesting enough, I know we've talked a little bit about some of these things and some issues that come up. If you go to page 7 on our budget, you will see key acquisition with tilt. That's $1,401. That's basically money that would go to the Department of Natural Resources. If you look for fee acquisition without TILT, that would be basically the potential for counties to own money. That's $150,000. And then if you turn the page and you go to our parcel list, there's not one parcel here listed here that's $150,000. So mathematically, if there were some land that the county decided they wanted to acquire, we would have to say, I'm sorry, we don't have the money, but it's an option. So, and you can see the value from our board. They wanted that option in there, but you can pretty much see from the numbers that it wasn't a high priority as much as it was working with the Department of Natural Resources and letting the counties know that at the very beginning what is going on and at the very end. And that was really the purpose of our proposal. So in protecting habitat, I think we're consistent with what you have all asked or wanted. I would just ask if you have any questions.
And again, I'm Bob McGillivray with the Trust for Public Land. This is a partnership with the Headwaters Board, the Trust for Public Land, and Bowser. The Headwaters Board is performing administrative and coordinating functions. The Trust for Public Land is doing all of the fee acquisition, and Bowser is doing all of the conservation easement acquisition. And so just to summarize what I think Tim said, this is predominantly a DNR acquisition program. There's a possibility that there could be a county acquisition, but right now there's not enough money to do one. So I think it's unlikely with this appropriation that we will do a county acquisition. It's possible, but unlikely. It's the vast majority of them, 90% of the funding is for DNR acquisitions.
Member Kingston and Member Olson.
To the extent that $150,000 would be used in that eventuality, I'm going to ask you the same question on the language and what impact that might have on your proposal.
Oh, are you asking the same questions that you asked before? What do you mean?
Oh, yes.
Okay. So we don't have the history,
right.
But the second question is somewhat of the fact of, are you talking about trails and proposals?
Can we read the language again?
Could you please?
Sure.
Yes.
I love doing this. imposition of this language, you know, what would that mean to this project? The portion that you talked about, relatively small overall. On OHF acquired land, existing trails may continue current use or be expanded if the proposed trails are consistent with the appropriation and the approved accomplishment plan, are for the purposes of habitat management and primarily benefit wildlife. Any existing or proposed trail not meeting all of the criteria must receive prior review and approval of the LoSAR's Sound Lake River Fund or its successor.
To that, we don't have any plans on current parcels for trail expansion or anything along that line. As far as LoSAR Council, we had County Commissioner from Aiken County, Brian Napstead, here last year, and he said many different times he didn't see it as trails being done on these properties from a technical standpoint. But he was saying he's speaking for himself and his board, not necessarily all of the eight counties. But he also did mention that there is a process already in place, a very rigorous process through the Department of Natural Resources, that even if it was going forward and it was suitable, that does not necessarily mean that grant and aid funding is an automatic given out. So there are processes that are in place, and in my personal opinion, not speaking for my board, but for myself, I think the processes are already in place that would help in that endeavor.
I would add, similar to what Craig Engel said, we've just seen this language this morning, so there may be some news. But the general principle there seems like it's something that can be worked out. And I think all of the things that I'm aware of that we're planning would meet those criteria, those four. And, I think we're in regular contact with staff, and I would certainly be happy to come in and talk with staff if there's, question about any of those things.
Thank you. Member Olson?
Thank you. Thanks for coming. In your revised accomplishment plan, I wanted to give you a compliment. Hey. You have a line in here for the types of trails or roads and allowable uses. The phrase, the sentence, roads or trails are typically excluded from easement areas if they serve no beneficial purpose to easement maintenance, monitoring, or enforcement. I think that concept is exactly what we're looking for. I really like it. I recommend people use it. And staff might want to steal some of it for anything that we put into our rules later.
The site where you're reading the...
Page 4 of their accomplishment plan, about 2 inches up from the bottom. Roads or trails are typically excluded from easement areas if they serve no beneficial purpose to easement maintenance, monitoring, or enforcement. That kind of concept, I think, is what we've been trying to get to.
If I could respond to that,
please, Mr. Chairman.
The easement language is from Bowser, since they're doing the easements, and it's my understanding that similar language is in the various Bowser accomplishment plans. So
you use that most flexibility.
And I understand that's why one of the reasons why this didn't get approved last meeting.
Right.
That's actually why.
The UF language.
Yeah.
Yeah.
How's it written to do that?
I guess I need to address the utmost flexibility. I'm actually a little surprised at this. Bill Penning, easement section manager with Bowser. I'm actually a little surprised that this has suddenly become an issue, because we have used this language for the last 3 years, so you've seen it at least 15 other times. However, the language that you just complimented us on was actually Bowser language that we wrote after, and it's now in all of our ML16 accomplishment plans. And the thing that needs to be noted here is that these proposals went in before the ML16 accomplishment plans were amended. So this will be our standard language now, and the utmost flexibility will no longer be used. That was our attempt to address a black and white yes or no question. Will there be trails? Yes or no. It was not intended to be offensive or a smarty pants remark. So if anybody is taking it that way, I sincerely apologize for that.
Thanks.
Member Blackburn.
I think that this whole dialogue about trails and things like that, I'm still not 100% convinced we need trail language, and I certainly appreciate what Cass County said, about restricting. I think there are plans, management plans, that make sense. And I grew up in Cass County. I used the trails. I went hiking there. I got super vehicles back there. I get all that. What I just want to, for everybody that's had to come here and talk about trails and all the decisions on trails, I just want to say, please have patience with us. It only takes one extraordinary failure in order for us to get hypersensitive. These are citizens' taxpayer dollars, and it is our responsibility to have oversight and ask questions and to not just trust. We did that, and it didn't work. So unfortunately, everybody kind of has to pay the price for that. And thank you for helping us as we work through this. And I appreciate all the work that you're doing. I definitely do. And as we move forward on it, we're going to continue to need your advice and guidance. And so, Bill, I'm sorry if that's what Bowser used in the past, but I'm glad you adapted it, because apparently what we've been past and what we've been.
Right. No, it's an evolution. This is all a very good discussion, and I think it's important to have. I completely understand why. I like the definitions that David has proposed here. I would like to provide some comments on them. I think they're pretty right on, but there's a couple things we need to make sure get included. But this used to be a wide open discussion. Now we're zeroing down in on what's the meat and potatoes of it, and it makes it much easier for us as the applicants to now be able to answer a question that before would just seem like this big amorphous thing that we couldn't answer, that was a checkbox, yes or no.
Senator Saxon.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, and Julie, I think what I'd say too is that if we'd had it all worked out differently, we'd had these three groups come in. And then we done the whole thing down in Brainerd. Maybe things would have been a little different too. We maybe would have taken on some new confidence, but we didn't. We haven't always listened to Cass County as carefully as we do now. The state of Minnesota didn't always finance the Upper Mississippi Headwaters Board as we're trying to get back and do now. And the expertise and what we've seen come out of the deer hunters has been very good too. So I might note these are all forced. These are all FRE or whatever in front of them. So I've had some victories and some not so good situations, but I think we're doing fine. I think these three groups come in.
Council pleasure.
Mr. Chairman, I would like to move approval.
Accept the motion of Member Dewey to approve the Thompson plan for the Mississippi Headwaters Habitat Corridor Partnership, Phase 3. Discussion and further discussion with regard to that Thompson plan. Hearing none, all those in favor of the motion to approve signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Those opposed, same sign. Motion is carried. Yes. The time is approved. Thank you for being here.
Thank you all very much.
Do you have anyone that wishes to address the council? Okay.
Good morning, Mr. Chairman, members of the council. Thanks for allowing me to speak here this morning. First of all, I want to say thank you for the discussion on trails. I thought it was, as Senator Sykes, I just, I think it was probably well past due. I hope you get some flavor, or you got a little flavor this morning about what we as user groups go through when we approach Cass County, some of our clubs say, well, we want a trail. We do not automatically get that trail we need. And most times in Cass County, we don't get a trail. They are very, very tough. But I think the approach that you're taking is very, very good. I think you will find out, I hope you're pleasantly surprised, because I think, you know, I know Senator Sacksock and certainly Representative McNamara, Chair McNamara understands everything that we've done over the years to bring more discipline, more enforcement, more training to the development of trails, to riding on the trails, and we have done so much, and I think we've come so far. But that being said, one of the things I would implore you to do is, as I think as Josh said, don't reinvent the wheel. I mean, we've got terms out there for these different kinds of trails and different kinds of restrictions on trails, like limited forest, managed forest. And if you develop another whole definition of trails, then it's just going to be confusing. It's going to make it more complex than it needs to be. I think you'll see everything, all the enforcement tools you will need or want are already in law or rule. And we work hand-in-hand with the DNR and the counties to develop these. We believe in these rules. We adhere to them. We try to improve them. You know, everything from which trails you can ride on and which trails you can't, or where you can ride where you can't, to confiscation machines when someone gets in and tries to, you know, screw around in a wetland. We supported those, and we continue to support them. We spend $2.5 million a year on enforcement. We specifically have a grant program for the sheriffs, so we get the sheriffs involved in that. And I think we have our opportunity to talk with you, make our presentation, and along with DNR, you'll see that we're very much in partnership with them. Doesn't mean we always agree on stuff. We fight like heck sometimes, but you know, we have learned that we just live with the outcomes. And if they've got a good reason why we can't be on, like, for example, any of the land you approved this morning, if there's good reasons we shouldn't be on that land, we won't be on that land. It's as simple as that. But they got to tell us why we can't be there. You know, not just we can't be there. But I think we have a very good process. Everything I've heard from the DNR, from the technical people, to the commissioner's office, things are so much better from my 20 years representing ATVs. And let me just say, the people I represent are responsible people. They want to do the right thing. We maybe don't always do the right thing, but we want to. Again, our safety program is a model for the nation. You know, I brag this group up because we've really come a long, long ways. I know Mark, having been involved in the deer hunters, has watched how that's all involved. So I appreciate what you're doing. My only comment is, please don't reinvent the wheel. You know, you had two folks over here, Greg Knopf and Janelle Taylor, who actually wrote most of this stuff. So I think they can give you pretty good guidance on what's already there. And I think the issue then is, how do you apply that, the application of the existing laws and statute to your concerns about the use. So I think that's, I feel very good about the conversation this morning. I'm really happy.
Thank you. Member Kingston.
I thank you for coming again today. I hope that you are pleasantly surprised in that the process to be more clear and transparent. You know, there's a rationale for having geographic dispersion on the council. I don't know if you know how much time I've spent on the ground in Athabasca and St. Louis County. It's not a matter of wanting to surprise each other. It's a matter of wanting not to surprise each other and to be very clear from the get-go. And so I hope you feel better walking away than you did last time, because I know you didn't feel good last time.
Yeah, no, I feel much better because I think
that's good.
If you're well informed, I think you'll be very surprised.
I agree.
Okay. Thank you.
Thank you. Anyone else that wishes to address the council at this time? Thank you all for your
Mr. Chairman. Only personal privilege.
Yes.
I would thank you, Mr. Chairman. I would like to report to the council that I was requested to represent the council at a dedication by Ducks Unlimited down near Swan Lake, where my hunting shack is. And I did that last Saturday. And this was a tract of land that was purchased with a grant approved by this council before I became a member. But they dedicated that tract on Saturday and mounted a plaque. They dedicated it to the Green Wing members of southern Minnesota, and they have another one coming up in northern Minnesota. But this was a piece of farmland that was converted to prairie. And when I was down working on a project in my shack early this summer, late spring, it had just been completely burned, and it was nothing but black soot and stubble. Saturday at the dedication, the big blue stem was taller than my head. You could easily get lost in it. The remarkable transformation of that piece of property, and I'm just amazed at how much difference it can make. And great project. Hope to see a lot more of them. Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
Thank you for representing the council. Anything further to come before the council today? It will meet on the 23rd, is the plan right now, so look forward to information coming from staff at that time. Nothing further. Thank you all again for being here today. Stand adjourned.